So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And the gentleman joining us, can you pronounce your name?
Damian Abraham.
Damian Abraham, back here at the Review Away studios.
Three-peat. Well, strap yourself in, brew the coffee, because it's going to be a long one.
Oh, that's right,
everyone. I see you both have coffees. I've got the tap out.
We are all in sync
here.
We've got some caffeine going. And, you know, I have a... I just turned 28 years old. And
I know. Happy birthday, first of all.
Well, thank you. This year, I've gotten a great gift in the past week because, you know, leading up to my birthday, you know, my parents were asking me, like, what do you want for your birthday and stuff? And I literally was like, I don't want anything. There's nothing I need. I've got more than enough books and DVDs, and I don't need anything. And what's happened is that in lieu of gifts, I've had all these things like happen to me in the last week, just like nice things, and it culminated with Damian.
Aww.
Hey, can I come in, guys, to do a podcast?
So
this is like your birthday gift to me and Wei.
And I feel like this is the first time that I'm bringing something of value to the product and to the listeners that are tuned in just for the product.
You're crazy. I think you are like the MVP.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
One day your name will be up there.
Beside the law t-shirt.
Yes.
Oh, that would be a great day if I'm retired there.
The law of fame.
And like, you know, the Hall of Fame, Wall of Fame.
Yes.
No, like I am legitimately excited to be here because I got to go and hang out with CM Punk this week
and
shoot my TV show.
The impetus behind all this. And we're going to get into WrestleMania 2000.
Because you know what? I just want to say once again, for you guys that haven't heard me say this before, I feel like I lose when I come in because this throws off my whole week of listening because I lose my Wednesday. I can't listen to myself. So I lose my Wednesday morning Review Away listening on my way to work. So I want you to know, dear listeners, that I'm sacrificing for you.
He's a very, very giving individual. Well, let's first chat about it. WWE rolled into town this past weekend.
Yes.
Of course, they had the Raw house show at the Rico Coliseum, which you attended. But prior to that, CM Punk is going to be on the Wedge.
Yeah. Should we talk about... I think we should get to the review first, because this way, if someone does not want to hear me talk about this, they can stop the review.
All right, we'll tease it there.
Okay, that's our teaser. Because I just feel like, you know, like sometimes when you're listening to the Colt Cabana podcast, you're like, I listen every week, and I buy things from you, Colt, so I don't really want to hear the plugs at the very beginning, you know?
And you got
to
hide them throughout.
Yeah. It's so much. But, hey, nothing against Colt. You know, he's doing a great service to everyone. So.
But this is a tease that I think people want to hear.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, yes.
Damian Abraham with shocking revelations behind the scenes with CM Punk. Tune in to the whole podcast.
I'm going
to
say it was an illuminating experience for me in so many ways. In so very many ways.
And that's
not just a tease.
All right. Well, we're going to review WrestleMania, and then I want to get a house show from you because it was your first WWE live event ever.
Yeah, I've been to quite a, well, not quite a few, I guess, by everyone's terms, but I've been to, like, you know, I don't know, half a dozen indies and one TNA house show, and this is my first time at the big one, the WWE main event.
The Rico.
Yeah. The main event, as it will be in this stage of the business, I guess.
Well, let's dive into it. April the 2nd of 2000, the WWE was on top of the world at that time. I mean, at a popularity peak up until that point, just generating millions and millions of dollars, destroying WCW, which at this same time period was producing classics like Uncensored, which we reviewed a few weeks back. So quite the contrast in products.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But also like kind of the same like high drama product, you know, like it wasn't like a work rate driven product. Yes. Like though there are work rate heavy matches and work rate heavy people, but like
no, like 99. I mean, it was really that's it. There weren't a lot of you know top workers, mm-hmm. and I really thought it was kind of the influx of you know Benoit and Eddie coming in, Kurt Angle kind of developing in that 2000 year.
Even the Radicals though, like it's amazing how. Like, you know, it's amazing to see, like, you see that, you know, the Jericho-Benoit angle match a couple matches later, but then you see the Radicals, and it's like they're being used against, you know, Too Cool and
China.
And China. It's like, wow, what a waste.
Yeah, it was as if these workers were coming into this soap opera framework, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and they didn't necessarily fit in, and they wouldn't until maybe a few months in.
Mm-hmm.
So we kick off with, and this was Anaheim, California, the Arrowhead Pond, and Lillian Garcia kicks it off with the national anthem. We go into a video.
Kind of small house, though, right? 19,000.
Yeah. I mean, by today's standards, I mean, you think of WrestleMania as this giant event.
Yeah, you think the buy rates they did back then versus now, where they have to really throw everything at it for a buy rate. Like, there's no one on this show, pretty much. Well, there's the odd celebrity, but...
I feel like it's probably more... I heard this on Observer the other day. They stopped doing these WrestleManias at hockey arenas. The only reason they did do them in hockey arenas was so they could get the media from those major cities, such as, you know, Madison Square Garden in New York or right here in Los Angeles. But these places didn't have stadiums for them to draw in, so...
I think WrestleMania should be in a stadium every year. I think it looks so great on TV.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I watch an arena every single night for wrestling. It's like I don't care about it going back to Madison Square Garden. I think WrestleMania should be in a giant stadium every year. If you can fill it, go for it.
Yeah, if you can fill it, I think it gives you that amazing first shot. But if you don't have the matches that draw the crowd in, it can... really seem dead in a stadium.
Well, that's the trade-off, is that, I mean, just the sound travels up.
Yeah, right up, and also you don't get that, like, crowd kind of, like, immediate banked behind the people on the floor where you can see them sort of behind, so it looks like just, like, a wall of energy. It just, like, looks like a lot of dead space, and then, you know, people in the seats far in the distance.
What's the largest venue you've performed in, like, just by sheer size?
On that Foo Fighters tour we did... 42,000 seats.
Jesus Christ.
Where? That was in the last show, which was... Oh, no, that was Sydney. Sydney was 42,000.
Wow.
Melbourne was the biggest, but that was like split over two nights of like 30,000 people.
Do you notice a difference between crowds in different countries?
Absolutely. Especially when you're us and you're playing to... 40,000 empty seats or 40,000 seats that are semi-full of people looking for their seats, waiting for the Foo Fighters to play. You definitely notice what it's like to play that versus a small club.
Right.
But that's the trade-off, you know. You get that's probably the most people we ever played to, even though it was like, you know, three quarters to a half full, because it's just like that many people, but you don't really get that energy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're the Foo Fighters, you get that energy, but when you're us, you don't really get that energy like you do in a small club.
But what about the people themselves and the crowd? Let's say for a smaller show, even if you played a show in Australia versus a show in Canada.
Yeah, you know, well, the only places I really notice a difference in the way people react to music, and this is not to stereotype or generalize, but it, Japan and Germany are the only two cities I know, only two places I've been to where people generally react to music in a different way. China, Mexico, all the same. But
in Japan, are they like very quiet?
In Japan, it was
fighting.
Well, I jumped off the stage, and it was like watching an old Japanese tape with you know, Bruiser Brody versus Abdullah the Butcher, when they go into the crowd and Abdullah's in the
crowd. Everyone runs.
And everyone's running and screaming. That's what it was like. It was like people were terrified to come. And then after the show, you're like, people come up to you and ask for an autograph. And like, you know, normally when, you know, a band like us, we're not that huge or anything. So after you play a show, you're like, hey, where did people like go eat afterwards? Like, where's like a fun place to hang out? Because you don't want to immediately get in the van and drive. And when we're in Japan, we had a lot of time off. And so we're talking to kids and they're just like, can you just sign this damn autograph and get out of here? Like, I just... tone, like just really polite, like, but just like, no, no, this is the relationship we have. I'm the fan and you're the performer.
Now tell me where the Ribera Steakhouse is.
Exactly.
As a wrestling fan, that's
I would
the one
love
spot.
To go. I would have loved to have go.
And I would have bought a jacket if I went.
I'm going to Japan for one day this summer to play Fuji Rock. And I'm going to try and go because I think we're going to have a day to kind of get acclimatized. And that's where I'm going to go. And I'm going to get a jacket. I'm going to buy a jacket. I think you can just buy them, right? Like, you don't have to be given them.
No, no. I think you can buy them.
Yeah. They're probably going to cost like $800.
Hey, well worth it, man.
Man, if you come next time with a Ribera Steakhouse jacket.
That will be the only way I could earn even less respect in Punk's eyes, I think. Anyway, more on that later on.
Oh, what a tease. What a tease. So we've got Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler for the show tonight, and
not the Jerry Lawler that and Jim Ross that I remember fondly.
No, this was
even Jim Ross like was not. I didn't think was like.
I thought in the main event he was tremendous.
Yeah, in the main event I think he was amazing. But there were some times where you're like, where even he couldn't fake enthusiasm for some of the matches.
Well, it was tough, and there were some matches here where even JR had to pretty much in those terms, like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And we start things off with a tag match, and the greatest throw in the history of wrestling, Howard Finkel throws to Ice-T, who comes out and...
Oh, sorry, sorry, I don't mean to... Do you guys notice the photo of Steph in the video package to start the show?
No.
Oh, my gosh. This they had, like, the photo of the wrestler and then the freeze frame of the McMahon that's going to be in their corner. Mm-hmm. And the one of Steph, like, whoever edited that together must have hated her. It is the ugliest photo I've ever seen. Everyone else is making a mean face. She just looks like she's been punched in the mouth and is recoiling.
Oh. Well, wow. She was a heel.
Yeah,
she's
that's true.
She's supposed to look like trash.
Yeah, exactly. She's also the boss's daughter. I don't know if you want to... You know,
maybe it was Vince overseeing this video. Yeah. It's like, ugly her up. So Ice-T comes out, broke a lot of rules here, including calling Godfather a pro wrestling star, and comes out with D'Lo, all the hoes, and then Ice-T yells to the Anaheim crowd,
grab your bitches!
Grab your bitches! Godfather in the house, bitch! And then Godfather gets into the ring, and if nothing else epitomized the Attitude Era, this did. Godfather dressed in, I don't know what, like, the baggiest pants.
Rick James hair.
Cowboy boots, like, all this guy needed was a line of Coke, and this stereotype would be complete.
I'm not gonna say I knew what was going on backstage, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was... That haircut looks like Rick James. He had a super freak.
He was
haircut.
Living the gimmick, I think.
I think Ice-T, too, because that's like Ice-T's big thing is that he is like the legit pimp rapper.
Yes.
Like pimps up hoes down.
This was cred for Godfather,
man. Absolutely.
And Godfather was over like to a ridiculous degree at this time.
And if anyone thinks that Ice-T is not a feminist, there's this line from I think it was called The Audio Pimps, and it was him and Cool Keith's project, which is I smacked the bitch, I killed the bitch. No, I smacked the bitch, I raped the bitch, I killed the bitch. Buy my new album. So that's, you know, let's just, you know,
in pimp terms, always, I guess, you know, that's the trifecta.
You know, it was International Women's Day last week, so I think Ice-T is always, you know, the riot girl.
Yeah, and we should note that this was 1 week before Vince Russo was returning to WCW, and maybe he was getting some ideas about, hey, we can call women anything.
Grab your bitches. Well,
this is great.
We know who was really enjoying the performance. It was Michael Clark Duncan.
Michael Clark Duncan enjoyed this whole show, and I think he thought he was at an MMA event because this was legit what was happening in front of his eyes.
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan, I would have much rather seen this guy on commentary for a few
matches.
Why have
they never asked him to do anything for the
WCW? I don't know. Is he still... I don't know if he's that relevant today, but at this point, I mean, he was in the Green Mile.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
There's certain celebrities that they just don't want, you know, like...
like Dustin Diamond, who, like, Lawler was like, just had to weirdly, hey, that's Dustin Diamond in the back. They didn't even want to... He's, like, trying to get
it
in.
It was a shot of Martin Short, and there's Dustin Diamond just in the back.
The time John Lovitz was on recently, and he's, like, waving behind the whole time, and, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's certain celebrities... Or, what's Chili? From TLC.
Oh, yeah,
not
yeah.
want anything to do with her, myself.
She was hilarious to follow on Twitter for a few Raws where she was just like,
there's like
super fan.
I like, why not put these people on? Like, you know, you need a celebrity guest host. It's not like you're getting that much higher or greater celebrity in a lot of cases.
Yeah. So we go from The Godfather and D'Lo Brown, with Godfather cutting this huge promo and the crowd just going nuts for this guy. And then out come the big boss man and Bull Buchanan. And I swear to Christ, they cut to a sign. Someone made a I love boss man and bull sign.
That was a plan.
I had to pause this just to take this in, that there was a boss man and bull Buchanan sign.
That was the guy that used to do impressions for the WWE and who's also in Wrestling with Shadows playing a fan. Have you ever noticed that?
The fan.
Remember the guy in? Remember the guy who used to go out for WWE? He would do impressions.
Are you talking about Jason Sensation?
Yeah. And then he's also in Wrestling with Shadows as a fan.
Yes, at one point.
So that's probably Jason Sensation holding up the sign in the crowd.
Maybe, maybe not.
A plant.
Boss Man tries to run in on D'Lo, but gets caught off by a Godfather clothesline. I mean, the Godfather, if ever there was a man who was all gimmick and no go, it was this guy. I just couldn't get over it. He was wearing, like, the Jericho flashy shirt as well. Like, he just looked rough here.
Hey, this was his WrestleMania.
He looked like a pimp.
This was his WrestleMania.
This was his WrestleMania outfit in 2000. Yeah. It makes me feel old when I watch, like, shows that I remember so clearly from 2000, and you look at, like, the fashion, and you look at...
You are
like,
old, man.
Christ, man. This is like...
You're 28, John. You're...
2000 is, like, ancient for people. Like, man, that was 12 years ago. This stuff is, like, there was some... horrible thing that, like, the Bloodhound Gang was able to make a living in music.
They're still able to make a living off of what happened to them in the 2000s.
They're now called LMFAO, aren't they?
No, well, that's I wish. Yeah. No, is that? No, they're not related.
I'm joking.
Okay. Because I actually met the Bloodhound Gang's tour manager.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool guy. Totally straight edge, like, vegan, like, not at all what you'd expect.
And they're still touring?
They're still touring. Wow. Oh, huge in Germany. Huge.
Really?
Oh. Amazing. My gosh, there's stuff that you will see in Europe that you'll be like, how does that, like, dog eat dog? Do you remember that?
Mm-mm.
No, no one does.
Aqua.
Well, did you actually read that? We digress so much.
Less.
But there's an interview with Grimes, you know, that new singer from Montreal that's kind of blowing up, indie rock singer. Anyway, I read an interview with her in The Enemy where she said that Aqua was criminally underrated. So I think Aqua.
I agree.
Due for a comeback.
Dude, I loved Aqua.
John's favorite.
To the point that in 2005, they were talking about doing one last reunion show in Europe, and I contemplated it.
I really,
that was the group I wanted to see the most.
I remember being with my friend trying to sell an Aqua CD one time, and it was just like the most humiliating. It was not my Aqua CD. You watching in this? Yeah,
you've got some credibility to maintain.
Not my
I have zero, so
but
I'm fine.
No judging anyone who likes Aqua. I like some really bad stuff too, but no disrespect, John. But but
listen,
just watching my friend try and sell it was incredible.
If you're going through a shitty day, I defy anyone to turn on Cartoon Heroes and not have a smile on their face by the end of that song.
Well, that was like
is a fucking heart pumping tune.
I used to work at a video store, and when it got to the end of the day and we had to clear the store, we put on the most insane J-pop we could find, like just the most over the top, nauseating Japanese pop music,
mm-hmm.
and people would just be running for the doors and like clamoring for the exits. I think that would what Aqua Cartoon Heroes might do to me. No, once again, that's what you got to end the show with.
Everybody has their kryptonite.
You got to end the show this week with it.
This match featured some just hellacious work here. The heels got the heat after a boot to the gut, and then a scissors kick by Bull. Long bear hug spot to D'Lo Brown. Bossman comes in with a backbreaker. They continue to wear him down. Godfather eventually gets the hot tag. He's in with Bossman. Misses him in the corner with the hoe train. And then D'Lo gets shoved off the top by Bull and knocked to the floor. Then D'Lo gets hit with a sidewalk slam, a top rope guillotine leg drop by Bull Buchanan, which was probably the most noteworthy offensive maneuver in this match. 9 minutes and 6 seconds to kick off WrestleMania. Bret Hart and Owen Hart opening up WrestleMania 10. This was not.
Way too long of a match involving people of this caliber of skill, I suppose. Very dull, and it just really felt...
Did this not get the bowling shoe reference at some point by Jim Ross, or was that a later match?
Well,
I'll
tell you what reference it did get at the end, when the hoes are running away from Bull Buchanan and Bossman, and Jim Ross kind of implies that they're about to get raped.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, what's going to happen backstage? Don't know if those hoes want it. It's like, or something like that. It's just like this moment where you're like, oh, geez, someone should be stepping in right now and calling the authorities at least.
Yeah, they won. They're allowed.
They're allowed.
They're bought and paid for.
And what Bull Buchanan and Big Boss, I know that was their first time teaming, they say, at WrestleMania.
At WrestleMania.
Yeah, they're like,
maybe.
This is their first time teaming together at WrestleMania.
And last.
And yeah, last. But were they brought together by flak jackets? Because that's the only thing they had in common.
What was Bull Buchanan's gimmick?
He was a security guy, I guess.
Yeah. Well, like, no, they said they had like some prior relationship down in some territory. They're like, oh, Jim Ross was like, oh, they've worked together. They have some like history, and I was like, I don't remember.
My brain can only retain so much, yeah. And Bull Buchanan's genesis is not part of my my recollection.
Failed us all today, John, by not remembering that.
But hey, move on to Right to Censor.
Yes. I mean, we look at this opening match, and you know, in recent years, they've really tried to put a more important match in the opening slot. Last year, we just saw the World Heavyweight Championship. In previous years, of Money in the Bank. This year, a meaningless match. Completely meaningless.
Well, and if there's any time to start putting on meaningless matches first, it's at these huge stadiums where you have people like trying to find their seats, and
that's what my opinion is too. I mean, I wasn't a fan.
Like the title match last year, Edge and Del Rio. I hated that.
That's what I mean. Like, I think you should always be building up to your important matches and put all your garbage matches off to the start.
But they also at this point didn't have any. They're not building towards any comeback or sort of like a return gimmick match or anything. It's like it's all solidly. You know, like all the titles are represented on this pay-per-view, whereas now it's like you've got a bunch of people coming back to wrestle that aren't involved in it. And
that being said, like, The Godfather was so over. Fans wanted to chant his catchphrases and watch the whole train.
Well, that's even, like, even the heels on this show, like,
but then
later
they lost.
On. Yeah. Even the heels later on, it's just like, as if you have a catchphrase, like, you're not a heel. You're just like, you're working a bad guy angle.
We'll get to that. I will rant about one BG later in this show. Triple H is with Stephanie in the back. They compare their diamonds in each of their titles because Stephanie at this point was the women's champion and Hunter the WWE champion.
And those are real diamonds in those titles.
Yes, of course.
I found out this week. Those are real.
No way.
And it's worth more than I'd ever want to know.
Jesus, wow.
They discuss how the McMahon-Helmsley era is going to put on the biggest mania of all time. And apparently they were finding their seats because they must have missed the opener.
Yeah.
Recap Sunday Night Heat. Tim White is explaining to all the hardcore participants about the 15-minute time limit, and he said, after 15 minutes, we will determine who's the champion and following all the belt changes. So we go to our hardcore battle royal, our let's get everybody on the card match. 15 minutes these guys were given. We've got Crash Holly defending the title with Taz, Viscera, whose entrance consisted of walking down and just giving the middle finger to the crowd.
Yeah.
Viscera has grown on me in these reviews.
I think this crowd is like, at first, like I kind of was like watching it and I'm like, where was this done? Because it seems almost like they're just so, all the ECW guys are just like so over, and like Taz is just so over when he comes out. And I kind of was like watching it without the promos. And so when I first saw it, I'm like, ah, a hardcore match featuring Taz. This might actually be really awesome. And it's like, oh, Viscera's next. It's like boner killer.
Where Taz went in 2 months from debuting against Kurt Angle to this.
Oh.
Just another guy in the hardcore battle royal.
Yeah.
Did he ever stand a chance, though? I mean, I think
not
once,
at that height.
Once Vince saw him in the ring with some
God
of his
damn,
other guys.
Was the rest of you.
Yeah. They pushed him really well, though, like with those opening, like at least before he actually came into the company with those 13 little videos.
And I always loved the idea of a little giant killer. Like I think
do too.
Chris Benoit was like, was awesome, knock but, on wood in a weird way.
Yeah, like, you just trailed off into dangerous territory there, didn't you?
But I love the idea of a little giant killer, and I think Taz could have been. Maybe he was like really injured at this point, because in this match
I doubt it. Because
he actually, this is where my memory will get good. The night after this, got a crazy neck injury on Raw, working, I believe, with Benoit.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it was a precursor, Damien. This was like a modern day gimmick battle royal. Here we had Pete Gass, Rodney, and Joey Abs of the Mean Street Posse, Hardcore Holly, Funaki, and Taka Michinoku. The Headbangers, the Acolytes, and those were your participants. And this was just Tons of title changes. Taz won in 25 seconds to get the title. Jerry Lawler had no clue what was going on.
No clue.
He thought the match was over.
No.
25 seconds in, it's like, this is the biggest show of the year, and this guy can't even read, like, the title of the match.
No, there's, like, some amazing calls by him later on, but this was, like, the first time that I'm like, he did not come to play today.
Viscera then pinned Taz at the minute mark to win the title, and he'd have the longest reign of, like, 4 minutes, and this was where it made no sense, because Viscera is your champion, and yet everyone was just brawling with everyone. Like, what's the point of attacking random guy? Shouldn't everyone be gunning for the champion here?
Well, I'm guessing the psychology is that they all know this match is not going to end for about 15 more minutes, so why not?
Just wear the guys down to the point where, like, wear the other guys down and try and survive yourself. They just didn't have anyone being smart at all in this match. Like, no one is like, I'm going to hide. You know, like, it was such an easy psychology thing to do, to have, like, one of the Mean Street Posse guys be like, I'm going to hide under the ring, and then come out later on fresh. And
I think the biggest mistake in this match was making it 15 minutes long.
I think the biggest mistake was just booking it.
Sure, that too. But I think 2 minutes in, this gimmick was already very thin.
Yeah.
And you could tell these guys, I mean, aside from some of the other, like the ladder match that we would see later on, no creative use of any of the gimmicks whatsoever.
No.
It's just what cookie sheet is under the ring. I'm going to hit you.
And
over
I don't
the head
even mind, like, hardcore matches, I guess, because, like, the stuff I, FMW and stuff that I got into. Like, but this is not a King of the Death match by anyone's imagination. There's, like, no innovation as far as.
This is a parody of that.
Well,
how,
a parody, yeah.
How awesome would this match have been if it was, like, 5 minutes just insanity, and Taz just chokes out guy after guy, and all these monsters in this match, like Bradshaw and Viscera and Taz.
Well, because when he slaps on the Taz Mission at one point,
they went nuts. They went nuts.
And I'm like,
for that.
Oh, this is what they're gonna do. They're gonna give him the bell, and they're gonna, you know, this is when they can record.
This was in Anaheim, not exactly your ECW hotbed.
Yeah. No, but everyone from ECW, like, when they came out, was just like, people just knew
that guy was over because whether it be those vignettes or just you had heard the about this guy from ECW, whether you'd seen him or not.
The name ECW carries street cred with it.
Yeah.
And it absolutely did until the mid-2000s when they completely demolished it.
When they destroyed it.
Let's put another Z on his name.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So the match continues. Your garbage can shots, cookie shots. Crash Holly was just bleeding everywhere. Bradshaw murdered somebody with an oven tray that got a big reaction. Rodney grabbed a badminton racket, and I don't know where this happened, but Pete Gass was, like, seeking out a blood transfusion because, my God, was he doing, like, the mask here.
Yeah.
I don't even know what he took here. It was just suddenly we cut to Pete Gass, who was just gushing blood. This was insane.
Yeah. Because no one was in the ring for most of the match. They're
bleeding,
like,
onto his cardigan. It was just way too many headshots to count. I'm not going to rant about this. Viscera gets thrown off the top by the APA and then attacked with a 2x4 as Kai and Tai then pins Viscera, but they award the title to Funaki. Then Taka runs after Funaki.
I thought there they were going to do something really cool. Like, you could be like, give these guys, like, 2 or 3 minutes to go super hard, and it's like, oh, wow, these two guys that no one takes seriously are actually amazing wrestlers. No, they ran away into the back.
Yeah. So the title went to Rodney. It then went to Pete Gass.
It went to
Thrasher. Thrasher got it, I think.
Whatever.
One of them.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, the highlight of this was an ECW chant, and then Taz attacks Crash. Taz, unfortunately, was hanging out with Lawler because he was going for pinfalls throughout after he had won the title at, like, the 10-minute, 15-second
mark. The best was the ref was also, like, I thought at first it was like, okay, maybe it's the gimmick that Taz has been hit in the head so many times he's confused and doesn't know what he's doing. But the ref's still counting his pinfalls when he's the champion.
It was, like, more than one time he went for a pin when he had the title. And then with 30 seconds left, he goes for the Taz Mission, and the crowd just lost their shit for this. And then the finish comes where Hardcore Holly grabs a glass jar from
That's
the announcer's
table. I was like, what did he hit him with? Because it looks insane. Mm-hmm.
And he hits Crash with the glass jar in the dying seconds. And the spot was that Crash was supposed to kick out, but Crash didn't kick out. So everyone was confused. I think it was Tim White didn't want to count three. Ross and Lawler had no idea what was to happen. And then they announced Crash got his shoulder up. He didn't get his shoulder up. They put the title on Hardcore Holly. This was a fucking mess. And just totally blowing spot here at the final 30 seconds. They ended up keeping it on Hardcore Holly. And then he lost the title back the next night on Raw.
Did Taz get hit by glass in the eye?
I think it was legit glass. Because
he goes down on the ground and is like rubbing his eyes.
It looked like, it didn't look like the gimmick glass, because you can tell when it's the gimmick part, and if that was legit, like, what idiots?
Even also, I have like experience doing dumb stuff with glass and shows, and like, yeah, like you got to watch out for people's eyes.
This was actually just a few months after Goldberg did that spot with the car where he was going to punch his arm through it, and they're like going to gimmick it, and Goldberg was like, no, my character would want to punch through real glass. I'm like, well, your character's retarded. Yeah. And he did it, and he missed 6 months of action because he almost severed a limb in his arm. Mm-hmm. Never use real glass.
No, the Damned still to this day will not play with glass bottles at their shows because in 1978 someone threw a bottle at the stage and it broke and blinded some girl.
Wow.
I remember that deal at Edgefest like a decade ago when Cake was performing and they pelted them with like glass bottles.
I've been hit by a bottle. I've hit myself with bottles on stage. It's
empty bottle or
empty bottles. Yeah, yeah. And I've been hit with a
full bottle. Would be,
it'd knock
Jesus
you out.
Christ.
It would knock you out. And there's also like, those glass bottles vary by how thick they are. Like certain brands break way easier than others. So European ones especially break very hard. So depending on what you hit someone with, it's like, oh, you could knock them out.
I once took a screwdriver to the face. That was not pleasant.
What was the?
I was like 8 years old, and I was at my cousin's house. And for whatever reason, he grabbed a screwdriver and he threw it. And it fucking, this was like right out of a movie where it's like flinging. And it caught me like right below my eye.
Is your cousin New Jack?
My cousin is not New Jack, man. But I almost need a new eye because I was like, Christ.
That's crazy.
It's something you don't really comprehend at the age of 8. But like, Jesus Christ, that would scare the shit out of me today. Just knowing how close that came to my eye. Can you imagine losing your eye from such a stupid story?
No, you'd be hardcore. That's what all the
you'd have
kids
a patch.
Would be saying.
You'd look like
I'm so glad none of these guys had an experience like that, because they probably would have suggested that's false. Why don't you throw a screwdriver, aim for right below my pupil. You can hit it.
Did you guys hear Necro Butcher's added to Wrestle Reunion?
Yeah, he's working Vader.
Well, I know.
Wow,
it's going to be... Oh, my gosh. Someone's going to die.
Yeah. Vader was... we've got that interview coming up. It's like an hour and a half with Vader.
Wow.
It's pretty... pretty in-depth, man.
I like the clips last night, or today.
Yeah, it was, Vader was an interesting cat. I've always wanted to get him on the lot. It's been
He's like supposedly like the stiffest guy, right? Like, that's what everyone said that he was like.
He worked snug. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's the one that, like, you know, was the one that no one liked to be.
Well, in the interview, he talks about when he started with the AWA, and he was in there every night with, like, Hanson and Brody, and they just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
So, he was, like, clued in a few months later, like, listen, wrestling isn't supposed to be like that. You're not supposed to be just killing each other. He didn't even know any better at it when he started his career.
Has he ever worked with Necro Butcher before? Like, this would be
No way. He's only done his odd Japan dates, and that's about it.
Wow. I'm excited. Anyway, if we digress.
Are you going to go to Wrestle Reunion?
I think you said at one point that I might be...
We want to have you on.
I want to come in and talk. I want to go anyway, because I hear you can pay... a wrestler to cut a promo with you. So I was
Vader's doing that.
Yeah, so I was thinking about paying them and doing a wedge, cutting promos on all the videos.
Oh, that'd be cool.
For each video, like, just like tells them, like, because you can tell them, like, hey, here's blah, 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 and just get them to cut five 1-minute promos with me on each video, like, all right, this band's the Big Pink, and then just get Vader to go, you know, ham on the mic with talking about the Big Pink and, you know, how they better watch out because we're coming for them.
That'd be awesome.
You can go across town that same weekend to Wizard World. You could do the wedge with Edge.
Oh, is Edge going to be at Wizard World?
He's going to be there. Competing events.
Mm-hmm. My friend, actually, I'll tell the story later on because I was I on since we did that Foo Fighters tour or no?
Yeah, I think you were.
Did I tell the story about the drum tech used to date Stephanie McMahon?
Nope.
I'll tell that story later on. We'll get to that later on.
What a tease. This guy has learned the art of the podcast.
Exactly. You don't give away the...
you got to listen to the whole thing. It's like you dangled it.
No, I do this because like this way you can stop listening like when it's someone that like everyone hates. Like maybe I'm a polarizing person to you. So this way you can cut out my part.
I have literally never got an angry response to Damian Abraham.
No. Well, I appreciate that, but I'm still worried, you know?
He's humble too, everybody.
Oh, please. Thank
I got you, this. I'm going to share this because this one guy, I can't remember, on Twitter over the weekend, he just sends a thing saying, John and Way, that Cult of Personality sign was a Colt Cabana reference. So I replied to him, and I listen. Maybe I sounded a little dickish, but I was like, "Yeah, I think we made it pretty clear. That's what the reference was." Yeah. But that was my reply. So he goes back, and he was just like, said something like, "Geez, sorry," and then a follow up reply. Sorry, didn't get through all of your condescending raw report. It's like, man, you come to me, and what? That's your dig now. It's like, oh, your podcast sucks. Some people, it's just like, boom. That's let's just go for the jugular. How dare you talk to me like that? Your work sucks.
But just think about it, John. If you were having the same conversation with this person in person, you'd probably look ridiculous talking to this 12-year-old kid.
Exactly. No, but I think about Twitter as being like, Twitter's now the ultimate thing where, as you would be sitting with your friends watching some award show, and you'd be like, man, that person looks terrible, and you'd like write it in, you just tell your friends that, and they'd be forgotten. But now it's like you look up the person's name, like Google their name on Twitter, and you're like, okay, at blah, 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 you look terrible tonight, and then you're like, send. And you're like, well, I'm glad that's out there. It's like, well, that person, you know, chances are if they see screens and screens of that, it's going to ruin their day.
It'll really hurt.
It's like, come on. Like, just save it for your friends. It's funnier when you tell your friends anyway.
Yeah, but it's funny when I read other people say it.
Oh, exactly.
I feel like if you're in the public eye, and you probably come to learn this as well, you really, especially looking at Twitter, you really have to grow some thick skin.
Well, and also, it's also, depending on who you are and depending on how successful you are, it's like, if you don't like it, you can just stop doing it. You know, you can just, you know, if you've got enough money, just like retire. Or like, you know, I think anyone's in the position where you can stop being a celebrity if you really wanted to. Hmm. And like people would argue, like Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, how would they stop being a celebrity? They could stop making movies. They could go overseas. Like, people would follow them for a few years, but, you know, eventually they would be fine. Like, you know, Cat Stevens, like, people just stop caring about them. They could say a bunch of really terrible things and people would stop caring about them.
I think it's just kind of a byproduct, almost. Like, if, say, for instance, here, I was not a fan of you at all. If we were here in person, I would never say that to somebody. Like, listen, your stuff sucks. But you have this kind of wall here online, and boom, you're free to go because there's no repercussions to it. It's like, well, there's no confrontation here. The worst they're going to do is tweet me back, and then I've got their attention or something.
Well, that's like, there's that scene in 24 Hour Party People. Have you ever seen that movie?
No. Mm.
Best movie. I love that's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's incredible. Factory Records. But Tony Wilson at one point is walking into the club, and someone's like, Tony, you fucking suck. And his girlfriend's like, why do you let them say that? And he's like, well, at least they're... Oh, no, and one of their friends is like, why'd you let them say that about you? I should punch the guy in the face. And his girlfriend's like, well, he just knows. At least they're talking about him. And it's like, yeah, like, you want negative and positive feedback because, you know, the worst thing is when people just ignore you. Like, you want heel heat or you want, you know, baby face, you know, love. You don't want that go away, ignore heat, or just everyone sitting on their hands.
Yeah. If you, here, I'll give everyone the key here, is that if you really want to get to me, just say, are you still doing that podcast? That pisses me off. I'm all fine with it. If you guys want to criticize, I'm fine with that. This guy online, I don't mean to be a dick to the guy. He was just, I guess, put off by my response. It didn't mean negatively. Well, that's my new resolution at 28. It's just to be nicer to people.
I had the best week ever. People are going to be – now people don't hate me. They will now. But they didn't hate me before. Sorry, they will now. But I had the best week ever on Twitter because Brett Easton Ellis tweeted that his record that he was listening to on his birthday was our record, which is awesome, writer for American Psycho. But then, even better, The Alchemist, the producer, tweeted at Frig, now I forget his name. A rapper that looks like me. He's a really great rapper, too. Action Bronson tweeted at him and was like, yo, dog, so happy that you're on the cover of Spin. How many rappers can say that? Good looking out, G.
And then
he tweeted back at him, ha, 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 that's fucked up. And then he tweeted back to him, like, yeah, I owed you from the last time you dissed me. So, you know, I'm like, whoa, that's so cool.
That's awesome.
Some rappers
about
are talking
you.
About me. And then I'm like, oh, wait, but they're using me to make fun of one of them. I'm like, you would never want to be this dude in makeup on the cover of this magazine.
I can top that. I had Scotty Riggs just joined Twitter and started following me, and then he did his first like friend follow and gave a shout out to follow me.
Wow.
So Scotty Riggs of the American Males.
Yeah, there we go.
High five.
Cool. There's That's a guy we've awesome, got to get on. No, remember they did that. They did the Kids Street high five.
There you
or
go.
As we can call in this there review, the Too Cool clap.
Yeah, the Too Cool clap, I was going to say.
We're reviewing WrestleMania 2000, I believe
in case
it was.
You forgot.
And Hardcore Holly won the Hardcore title for a night.
Yeah, well, just in the most awkward finish of all time that just felt so weird.
Everyone was confused. Yeah. No one knew what was going on. And then someone clued in, guys, this is a fucking Hardcore title. We'll switch it at TV tomorrow.
It doesn't
yeah,
matter.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, we got a feature on Fan Access. We heard comments from Val Venus, China, Jericho, Terry, Big Show, Test. And then there was a fan who got to call a match with Michael Cole,
oh
and he told
God.
The camera, how many fans get to say they got to call a match with Michael Cole?
Well, if I had one of those tapes, I would have been stoked.
Would you do the wedge with Michael Cole?
Oh, it'd be amazing. I would, but I think that would be the time that I'd be like, why do you do what you do? Like, what, is there someone telling you to say that stuff?
Yeah. I was at an Access when they were in Toronto, and I just, like, at the end of the day, this was, like, the end of the last day at Access, and, like, just to see Michael Cole calling this TLC match for, like, the 100th time with this fan, he just looked so miserable. Michael Cole sitting there all day.
I guarantee you Fan Access, from my limited experience meeting wrestlers, is probably the day they dread the most on the calendar year. Like, I really think that's the year that they're this time where they're, like, Christ, this day again.
Mm.
Oh, man.
I can't remember who it was, but I remember some wrestler doing like some meet and greet, and I think we were covering it, and he kept asking everyone for Purell and stuff. He's like, I need Purell. He was just disgusting. He didn't want to shake hands with fans and stuff.
I'd be the same way.
It's kind of gross.
Yeah, I'm going to get into it later on. I've got a new philosophy on it.
All right. About shaking hands?
No, about wrestler-fan interaction.
Some of them can be positive, others can be negative.
Yeah, like, but I think you never, ever leave. Once they know that you're a mark.
Mm.
And you will always be a mark. Like, not to everyone, but I think there's, like, and that you'll never be able to be inside. And that's not every wrestler, because I've definitely met, like, some people that are really cool. But I think, and it's just, like, the culture that it breeds. Like, you know, like, whereas, you know, when you meet someone who's a music fan, it's like, well, you're a music fan, I'm a music fan. But once you're on the other side of that curtain, you're like, well, that's them, and this is us.
Yeah, I've interviewed enough people, and I've had enough good...
What the fuck is that? What the hell is this? I think it sounded like a
Stone Cold Steve Austin theme from Disturbed.
Was it the Stone Cold Steve
Austin? It was actually the law clip that we played last night on the law going off in my...
As I hit my... I thought Stone Cold was calling in again.
No. That would have been hilarious. Did you hear that story?
No, I mean, because here's the thing. It wasn't on iTunes this morning.
There were problems with
iTunes. Yeah, so I was listening to it. I was streaming it, and then when I left my house, I lost my Wi-Fi connection, so I
don't know what's going on with Podbean, but I stayed up till 3:30 last night, and multiple times it would not accept the file, but I got to wait 25 minutes to find out it's not accepting it. I tried that twice, everyone, and yeah, 3:30 I gave up.
Yeah, because understandable.
I had to be up at 7.
Yeah.
But it's up now. iTunes. Vader and Steve Austin.
Well, I mean, listen, I will hear that now when I walk to this interview I got to go to.
There you go. I hope it's a positive interview.
Oh, it's a great interview. I'm talking to him.
Oh, that was the point I was making, that just I've had enough good and bad experiences with guys that I just...
Yeah, like, and I don't even mean bad. Like, I'm not saying, like, it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, I think that's the culture.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a culture of, you know, like, no matter, like, you're a fan. Like, it's like a magician. You know, like, a magician, like, they're never going to let you into the club unless you're another magician. Like, they'll let you know some stuff, but, you know, they don't want to ruin the business.
Yeah. I think with a lot of guys, too, it's like you run into somebody, it's like, man, these guys are traveling nonstop. Odds are you're going to run into them on a bad day.
Oh, absolutely.
Or a bad moment. And I realize, listen, I've been prepping for this interview, but this is probably interview number 7 of 12 for this guy in one day.
Yeah, I do find, like, like bands are the same way, right?
Sure.
Like, bands.
It's going to be days you just don't want to be talking to
the
media.
Yeah, but I still think, like, if someone comes to you with a genuine love of what you're doing, you'd be very hard to be... you know, stone and steely in that face. Like, I've met people that were, but I like, even those people, I find if you come to them with legitimate enthusiasm about what they're doing, like, yeah, they want to interact with you and they want to, you know, because how can you not? Like, if someone's being really complimentary to what you're doing and really, like, you know, and has some insightful view about, you know, the larger culture that you're a part of. But I think in wrestling, there's, like, there's a detachment in a weird way. Like, and I'm not, I don't know, I'll get into it later. I don't want to, I don't keep teasing all these things, but, like,
you have a lot to get to later.
I've got a lot to get to, man.
I hope you're making a list here.
Oh, I'm checking it twice. Let's
can't tease something without the payoff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, this isn't Vince McMahon getting beat up by Nexus.
No, exactly. Whatever happened to them? I saw a guy at that house show in a Nexus shirt, and it was like, whoa. Those
remember them?
What was that?
Yeah. It was a great night in wrestling.
It was.
They followed up. Al Snow is in the bathroom with Steve Blackman, with someone hiding inside of a stall. Blackman warns him, don't pull any stupid shit. This is Wrestle-fucking-mania. And then we cut to an extreme close-up of Trish Stratus' chest.
This was Trish's gimmick.
It's awkward for you to watch, Way.
No, not at all. Why?
I don't know. You and Trish have you guys have quite the rapport.
No, not.
She loves you.
The same as any type of a camera person and a, I don't know, subject.
She always brings you up, whether you are there or not. Where's Way? How's Way?
Yeah. Well, it was not awkward.
But I think this also shows that, like, where will Kelly be in a few years? Like, if Trish Stratus can go from this to being, you know, arguably one of the greatest female wrestlers, like, yeah, will Kelly learn to run the ropes?
Well, how long has Kelly been in the company?
She's been on that roster 6 years.
Yeah, but all it takes is one good road agent who's like, let's make this division count.
I think it takes a lot more for Kelly. And I don't see Kelly with any half the business sense of a Trish Stratus.
No, that's true.
It's kind of nuts when you think that Kelly, first of all, she was doing an exhibitionist gimmick, and she was like 19.
Yeah. And she's really small. I had no idea.
She's got a tiny body that is not built to be falling.
No, she is a tiny, tiny person. Like, I you know, because all the wrestlers are so much bigger in real life except for her.
I would actually, I mean,
her hair is way longer in real life.
We get asked this question about whose biography we'd love to read if they ever came out with one. And I think I would really love to read the Kelly tell-all because imagine all the road stories of every single person.
The Kel tell all.
There you go.
Telly.
Oh, fuck. John Paul.
Telly.
All right. Well, that biography sounds as enticing as this next match. We have Snow and Blackman come out, and Snow introduces Chester McCheeserton, who comes out wearing a cheese outfit with his ass cheeks coming out of the back, and we start a Let's Go Head Cheese chant. This was like an offhand remark on the Raw going into this show that Blackman just hypothetically said is a stupid idea. So Al Snow made it happen here. This would be a low point, I think, in WrestleMania history.
This is when I was like, wow, they will stick anything on that stage tonight.
This is when Damian was about to call Vags. I'm busy, my dad. I don't think I can make it.
No, because I was actually surprised when it starts how amazing Test and Steve Blackman, their opening exchanges. Is it just, well, maybe it's because I just expected it to be so bad that they're like, there's counters and roll-throughs, and like, I was like, whoa, this might actually be pretty good, and then...
I was distracted by a few things, the first being Jerry Lawler saying, I love TNA, and Test and Albert aren't bad either, and then Jim Ross's headset going out.
Yeah.
A TNA moment here.
And then Jerry Lawler not knowing what to do.
Lawler was just, oh my god, I'm in the deep end on WrestleMania, and... Trish!
He just stops talking at one point. Like, and he tries to give Jerry Lawler his headset. Like, here, just take, I know I'm useless. You get back in there.
I'll run to the back and get some help here. Albert throws Snow into a big boot by Test. Crowd was just totally dead for this. Yeah. I mean, just sitting on their hands. Test gets drop kicked to the floor off the apron, and they double team Albert. Then Test eventually gets the tag, attacks both men. Snow comes in, and Ross brings out the bowling shoe reference here for the match, which was pretty appropriate here. And then Snow with an acai moonsault to Albert on the floor. Snow hits a leg drop off the top rope to Test. And there had to have been a pulse in the audience here because Chester then went after Trish. And the crowd, that was the only thing I think they reacted to, was this little cheese man going after the hot chick.
I just didn't get the point. To me, I heard Dead Silence for this stupid cheese character.
Test hits the elbow drop to Steve Blackman, pins him at 7 minutes and 1 second, and Ross concludes this, that two teams that didn't really get it on track tonight.
No.
That's the indictment from the VP of Talent Relations at the time.
I felt really bad for this crowd thus far. You pay $300 for a ticket to WrestleMania with all the hype going into it, with all the expectations, and an hour into the match, what have you been treated to thus far?
We've got a hardcore battle royal, Bull and Boss Man, and Test and Elbert winning their matches.
Against Chester McCheeserton.
This was so lame. I was not a fan of this.
And was the finish meant to be a heel turn, or is that meant to be a babyface turn in the Attitude?
You're talking about the attack.
Oh, that's right. Afterwards, Snow gets on the mic. He admits it was a stupid idea, and in his John Pollock moment said, "It's time to cut the cheese." Silence was what was met by this line. And they hit Chester with the microphone. Steve Blackman murdered this guy with what we would now call the brogue kick, just like a bicycle kick into his face. This is a guy who's in a fucking triangle cheese thing where he can't even land properly. Looked like he just got his head shot off his shoulders. And then they attacked him some more. You could say heel turn, but in order for a turn, that means the crowd had to have cared. Well,
and they also used the James Storm, Robert Roode finish.
The America's Most Wanted.
Finish. Where you jump off the, what do they call that? The death sentence.
The death sentence.
Yes,
that was it. And that's what the crowd got here. This match.
I thought Steve Blackman was, like, I always thought he was an okay guy. Like, he even here in the match when he's, like, yelling at the crowd and, like, I thought you'd put this guy in as a heel. You don't have him talk, you know, and make him just, like, an imposing force, you know, but not in comedy matches.
Yeah. I mean, I thought there was something to him, too. I think if pushed the right way, he probably could have made it into something. But the way they were pushing him, it was like they wanted him to be a personality, which he had absolutely none of.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see a whole lot of upside in the Lethal Weapon. The Cat is naked in her locker room with Mae Young, just hanging out, and one of the writers saw Austin Powers, and they did a spoof where they hid her boobs and her vagina with a t-shirt with a pussycat on it that she used to discreetly cover her frontal area. And then we had water bottles covering her. So clever. Almost as odd as Jerry Lawler, her husband. Are they married? Can't remember.
Terry Reynolds? Married, yeah.
No, the cat.
Oh, the cat.
And,
yeah, they were. Yeah,
they were, yeah.
So Lawler had to call this. And
he's called a lot worse with her.
And I think, believe me, after what he was saying about the red-dressed hoe in the first match, really, I think she's the one who should be more embarrassed, you know, like, you know, having to, you know, have this to come home to.
I actually thought this skit was quite impressive for a WWE-produced skit.
It was timed very well.
And Mae Young.
Yep. Well, it was a pre-tape.
Still, you need some type of coordination
perfectly
do it.
Yep.
There you go. Highlight.
I guarantee you that took more work than this match took to go through.
No, we got
to
lay out this backstage segment first. Yeah. You guys can do whatever in the match. Michael Cole's with the Dudley Boys. Devon says he's a bit scared of heights, but they will keep the titles tonight. And Bubba, who still had his accent but had ditched the stutter by this point, says they will take WrestleMania and the ladder match to a new level of violence. And they show Edge and Christian the Hardys fighting on the ladder on Sunday Night Heat. And that leads us to the tag match. Edge comes out with Christian with a cowboy hat. Cowboy Edge from Toronto.
Yeah, it's a look.
Big cowboy scene here.
This was at a time when all six men involved in this in the tag team division in these three teams were starting to get noticed in crafting their legacies. I mean, it started in 99 with the Terry Reynolds and Invitational tag match.
Tournament. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then it expanded.
Which I reviewed on here, too.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Perfect.
You followed the whole progression.
Exactly.
Of this
and, of course, it expanded to include the Dudleys and namely that tables match at Royal Rumble that year. But at this time, they were finally starting to incorporate the tag team titles into their feuds, which before that point were held by teams like the New Age Outlaws. So now they're really cementing themselves at the top of the tag team division.
Yeah, so not a shock here. This was the standout of this entire show. Jeff came out, runs under all the ladders, and then the match begins, and way too many spots to go through here, but some of the highlights for you was Matt started off here with an elbow drop to Devon on top of the ladder, and you got the sense this crowd had just, they had sat through all this crap that they were just happy
already
to see anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you just give us a good match and we'll make it a great match,
yeah,
and you over-deliver that and we will respond in kind. Jeff missed a 450 splash to Bubba on the ladder for the biggest reaction early on, and then Bubba with a senton off the second turnbuckle. I mean, this was a match where we had seen in the past where it was guys working with a ladder in the ring. This was where the ladder became the focal point.
Yeah, they were doing
big,
that.
Big spectacular spots built around the ladder.
Yeah, and where you would have guys jumping off the ladder and like leg dropping a ladder with a guy in between and stuff.
Like, this was at a point where it was like the high point in terms of spectacle ladder matches was what they had seen at No Mercy, and this was just at a completely different level here. Bubba did the Terry Funk spot where he put the ladder on top of his shoulders and just swung around hitting everybody. Christian came off the ladder with a crossbody to Matt and Bubba on the floor. We saw Edge the first time he did this, where he speared Jeff off of the ladder. And then three ladders are set up in the ring, and Bubba hits an ace crusher to Christian off the ladder. This crowd could not believe what they were seeing here. And Anaheim can be a tough crowd at times, but they were just in awe here of some of these spots. And then all three teams are climbing in the middle with Jeff and Christian. They get knocked off. Christian bumped like right to the floor, which he would do in a couple of these ladder matches, which was just crazy. Edge and Matt had the foresight, you know what, let's just crotch ourselves on the top rope and probably get the same reaction. And then the Dudleys just landed in the ring. Michael Clark Duncan was losing his mind in the front row. He's like, what am I watching here? Two ladders are set up, and then they put a table on top of the ladder to bridge the two in the middle of the ring. And we see a powerbomb to Matt off of the announce table by Bubba through another table to lay him out. Bubba then sets up a table in the aisle ahead of this gigantic ladder. Christian attacks Bubba with the ring bell.
And they also set up the two tables and then the Jerry Lawler double tables, double carnage. And they already set those up for later on for the finish?
I don't think they set up the double tables on the outside.
No, I thought they set them up inside the ring and then they went outside.
They had like the one table, spot, I think, just on the floor for the finish.
Oh, okay,
and
okay,
then the bridging ones. But this was with Bubba laid out on the table. This is where Jeff did his infamous spot, which has been replayed a million times, where he delivers the Swanton off of this gigantic ladder. Mm-hmm. I mean, just an incredible visual that I think everyone associates when you think of Jeff Hardy. Yep. This is one of his most legendary spots.
It looks like he lands on his neck, too.
Sure. I don't know who was more insane in that spot, Jeff or Bubba, for taking that
Well, I think Bubba could have protected himself a lot more than Jeff, like, you know, doing that somersault, like, you know, like that, like moonsaults have gone bad for guys even at a much lower,
and with
like the margin of error so small.
Yeah, and with Jeff after this match, he was saying how he landed on his heels and like broke or just injured his heels.
Yeah,
like he used his heels to take all of that.
Yeah, it looks like the most come whipping down.
Oh, it was incredibly painful spot, but that being said, if you're going to do a stupid spot, this is the show to do it on.
Yes.
And at least it's a spot that everyone has seen at this point. It's not like when you see guys do some, like Jeff Hardy on some Bound for Glory we reviewed, did like an even crazier spot off the entrance for the pay-per-view onto Abyss or something, onto the floor, which to me was even more spectacular, but you would never remember that.
Well, that's only because it's TNA, though. If he was to pick a place on TNA to do it, Bound for Glory would be it, wouldn't it?
Well, I wouldn't be doing anything for TNA.
No one
remembers anything.
I don't know why WWE, there's guys, like people are, like last time I said this, and I'm sure, like, you know, it's you know, I don't want to suggest anyone kill themselves, maybe not this extreme, but a match like this on a card today, like, you just need one match. I'm not saying you put guys in it time after time, but, like, there are guys that are doing this for $40 a night, you know, in a gymnasium. Like, WWE can surely get some guys to do it, like, once or twice, maybe on a big pay-per-view, which I guess they do with Money in the Bank, but like...
I think there are a lot of people that would be happy to take these risks if they're putting them in that position.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure those guys that are taking those risks for, you know, $100.
But after this, though, after this era, I mean, I'm sure they're a lot more careful now. In fact, I don't think a match like this would be allowed to take place today.
No, for a lot of reasons, I think they're... Just in terms of safety and just in terms of just setting people's expectations so high. I mean, this was something, I mean, these guys had to follow many times with SummerSlam and then the following WrestleMania. Yeah. And it was each time, it was like, you can only do so much with your body here.
But there's nothing even comparable to this at all in WWE right now, product-wise. Like, and it's like they could get away with the product, you know, like something for everyone type of booking where I think a match like this just livens up the crowd. And then like, for the rest of the night, the crowd was up. But.
Yeah. The finish came with Matt hitting a twist of fate to Devon, and then he climbed up to the table that was lodged between the two ladders. Christian is climbing up as well, but then Edge comes from behind, kind of taps Matt, who takes this somersault off of a table through another table, and then Edge and Christian grab the titles. 22 minutes and 29 seconds, and just a huge match for all six guys. They stole the show at this WrestleMania and was... to me, like, the lone highlight match of the entire card.
No doubt. Another classic match from these six, just one of many from these guys. I have to say some of these spots were kind of tough to watch at certain times because of their sheer recklessness, but, you know, that's what they're known for, and that's kind of partly of what made them great. I just love the style. I mean, contrast this hardcore match with the hardcore match that we just saw earlier. These types of matches had so much planning and so much creativity to them. What we really got to see was like, it was like people setting up dominoes, you know, setting up these like really complicated contraptions. But even though it's unrealistic, it's so rewarding when they finally fall through a table or jump off a ladder and whatnot. So I loved all these matches that these guys have done.
Well, like, I think, you know, having gone through a table, I think it would probably be, it doesn't hurt that much, you know, whereas taking a snap mare or like a German suplex, like, that would hurt. Like, so it's kind of like, I think these sorts of matches, like, for the risk versus reward, like, if you do them right, like, obviously this is much crazier than you'd have to do, but I think if you do a match like this right, you can protect people like more potentially. Like, how many guys have been injured in matches like this versus guys just been injured by spike pile drivers, you know, or just like a finisher at the end of the match?
I love how talking to you is like, it's like talking to a wrestler because you've done all these crazy things.
Well, no, except
as someone who's taken a beer bottle to the head.
I've never done it with any training, and I've definitely done it in a much stupider way than I should have. You know, I having had like limited experience with my friend learning how to bump for one day, it's a lot more science involved than the way I do it.
And so a huge performance here from all six of these guys. And then we go, and everyone that had to follow these guys were probably, you just see Hunter in the back, like, these fuckers, I'm beating every one of them in the next month. Kevin Kelly is with Mick Foley and Linda McMahon, and Linda says, go for it.
Yeah.
And says this is the biggest, Foley says this is the biggest match in WWF history, on the biggest WrestleMania of all time, and he wants people to talk about this match for the next 10 years, and, let's give him the benefit of the doubt that in the back of his mind he was referencing the last match and not his match.
I mentioned this last week when we reviewed the Go Home show, but Foley's push for this entire feud, for this main event, was just so small in comparison to
I think
so
he legitimately felt bad about going back on his retirement because in his head that was it for him.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can't see how anyone would criticize a guy for making close to $1 million in one night for one match.
He even kind of tries to turn heel halfway through this when he like we'll get to that, I guess, but later on. But
you could just kind of tell, even in the promo, this wasn't the best from Foley. It just seemed rushed. You could, like, his heart just didn't seem into it.
Jim Ross puts over the last match. They just really put a lot of attention on it. They go back to highlights of it. They really spent a lot of time just about how this match will be talked about for years. And it made all six of those guys just come across as much bigger stars. You just saw a career-defining match for those six.
Well, and that's like a great mid-card match because, like, even though I think the Dudleys were two of the best talkers when they were like some of those ECW things. But when they brought them in, like giving Bubba the stutter and not being able to really speak, here you have like a bunch of mid-card guys that aren't really good at the microphone that people will care about now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you contrast it to just a year later at WrestleMania 17, where all six of those guys, where they were a year after that, I mean, in terms of like top of the mid-card mix. And it was, you know, this certainly kind of sped up the process of them all becoming much bigger characters within the company. So then we go to our women's match, the lone singles match of the evening. And we've got a guest referee, Val Venus, who comes out with his T-shirt. I am cocked with a sperm font on his shirt. That's what this was.
Yeah.
I am cocked, and on the back reads, locked and ready to unload.
I think that's why I was so slow to take Robert Roode seriously, is because he looks so much like Val Venus to me, like the hair and everything, that like, I just wanted to hate
both Peterborough.
That's Markham. He's from Markham.
No, he's from Markham.
Yeah, yeah, but Ontario. Might as well be Toronto.
Yeah, it's all the same.
It's all the same in Canada, right, guys?
Yes.
Anywhere?
Yeah, we all know Keanu Reeves. The rules are the first person to throw their opponent out of the ring is the winner. And Jim Ross is like putting a disclaimer. He's like, neither woman is an experienced grappler. And he compare Val then cuts his promo, comparing himself to WrestleMania. And the difference is he comes every single night, whereas WrestleMania comes once a year. Even at the time, folks, this gimmick had really run its course.
Yeah, just like, it's just so.
This character
gross.
Worked, I think, for like 8 months.
Yeah, and I think it works as a heel. It does not work as like a over baby face.
I fuck women. I fuck.
Guys love that. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I guess they
high
do.
High five.
They like that guy. What's his name? Tucker Max and stuff, right? Yeah, like, they like douchey dudes.
This could have been Edge.
That's right.
This is who the gimmick was
really
for Edge. Thank God.
Val Venus, I think, is way better on the mic than I think Edge was at this point.
Yeah, he was a good promo, but man, just not a lot of range you get with a porn star.
No. Yeah. Unfortunately, he'd be pretty
and
much.
And with that name, it's like forever. Your name will be rhyming with penis.
Well, they tried really hard to push him as Chief Morley and tried to give him a serious gimmick afterwards. It just wasn't working.
No, it does not work. I think if you get. Then the worst thing that happens is you'd be a mid-carder and your gimmick gets over. Because then there's like no way to get back. Like if you're in the mid card and you have a terrible gimmick, like, you know, the Taskmaster or something like that. Like not everyone's gonna be Stone Cold Steve Austin or what was the Ringmaster, right?
Yeah, sorry.
Not everyone's gonna be Taskmaster was what Kevin Sullivan.
Yes. Right?
But not everyone's gonna be Stone Cold Steve Austin. Uh-huh. But like you can recover from that. But if you're like Val Venus or Zack Ryder, I think is gonna have a really hard time. Like where do you go? Like
and
you're always gonna be mid card.
But I don't think Zack. I don't know, man. Like, I never
I think
see
there's
that
certain guys who it's like a Santino. He knows what his role is, and he knows more importantly what his role is not.
Yep.
And that guy is great in that role, and he'll only be in that role of comedy, and he's great at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think The Godfather. The Godfather was in the perfect spot in the card with an over gimmick, and it was never well. We got to move The Godfather up to the main event.
Yeah.
It's just knowing everyone's place on the card at times. So. Val Venus, this was his spot. Guest ref for the chicks match. Terry Runnels comes out accompanied by the fabulous Moolah against the Cat with Mae Young. Ross once again reiterates that this is going to be a terrible match. Don't bother ranking this with stars. It's not about stars. This was as much of a shout out to Dave Meltzer as you could get on a WrestleMania card. Both of the women make out with Val to start off, and then Cat spears Terry. Mae gets on the apron.
Talk about awkward with her husband right there.
Yeah. Lawler's like, oh, awesome. Mae then gets on the apron, distracting Val, and Terry gets sent to the floor, but Val Venus is distracted, so he doesn't see it. Moolah and Mae get in the ring, and Mae then makes out with Val, and Terry gets tossed to the floor again, but Val's still distracted. So Moolah pulls Kat out and puts Terry back into the ring, and the bell is called at 2 minutes and 25 seconds. We didn't even get a clean finish for this.
That's fine.
It was just to get this Mae Young or spot at the end.
Yeah, Mae got to make out with Val Venus, and then Mae attacks Moolah and Terry. May then hits the Bronco Buster onto the Fabulous Moolah, and then Kat tears off Terry's pants.
But she has a lot of trouble doing so.
And well, what did she? Did she have like a skin-colored thong on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I'm like, is that her butt for real?
I didn't know either.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will tell you, I always had a thing for Terry Reynolds. Like, I've never been like a guy who's been like, ah, oh, the divas. But Terry Reynolds being a pre to pubescent boy, pretty damn attractive at that time.
Just the cigar.
It was a lot of things. It was because she was kind of bad. And
you like Terry Reynolds better or Marlena? Or her secretary?
Exactly.
What was her name? Alexandra York from WCW.
I don't know. I'll tell you what I don't like. Terry Reynolds being victimized by New Jack now. Feels really awkward.
New
Jack is one of those dudes where it's like, there are bad people in this world. Like, there are people that do bad things.
Romance gone wrong in wrestling. They air an ad for WrestleMania 17 based around the attendance record in WrestleMania 3, and the tagline was, records don't bend, they break. But it did not.
It wasn't even close.
Not even close.
What were they thinking?
67 or so for that WrestleMania? I was like, why? That Astrodome doesn't even hold enough to break. I guess it could break the legit record of WrestleMania 3, but not the kayfabe record.
What is legit record?
I think the Wembley Stadium show is their most like legit. Uh-huh. It's like 79 or something, and WrestleMania 3 was like 78, something like that. But there's no way they can acknowledge that 78 at this point.
Yeah.
So, unless they can find an arena that holds 94,000 legit.
You'd have to go to South America.
How much does that Cowboys Stadium hold in Dallas? It holds like 100 for football.
Yeah.
I don't know, that
would be a better place to do it than New Jersey in April.
You guys think they'll ever draw 100,000 again for Romania?
I think if you had
the right
match, Hulk Hogan live porn screening.
Totally.
You had
China on the undercard.
China on the undercard with her thing.
This year's Mania is pretty stacked. Do you think they could have drawn 100,000 in Cowboy Stadium?
If they had cheap tickets. If they made like the top cheap seats,
They got off to a good start this year, but then tickets like slowed down, and that's with a main event announced. Usually every year when Mania goes on sale, you have no idea what the main event's going to be. That goes on sale in like November, and this year you had that main event, and they got a decent start, but I'm sure it'll be full by the time we get to WrestleMania.
Yeah, absolutely,
100,000. That's ambitious, you know, even at the best of times.
Yeah, I bet you could if you like. You know, if you had those cheap, like the Sprite Zone type tickets in the top, where
I love
like
the Sprite Zone,
and you put fucked up during the intermission.
You would get
at least the entrance for
100
CM Punk.
People. Yeah, we could do CM Punk's entrance, or we could do Generation for Daniel Bryan again, Bryan Danielson, when he used to use our song
That's
for
right.
his entrance.
That's right.
You could just email him.
Yeah, exactly. Never hear back. I said to CM Punk, like, are you going to see Bryan Danielson anytime soon? He's like, yeah, probably Monday. I'm like, tell him Damien says hello. Because it's like, maybe that'll get to him now. I digress.
Maybe there'll be a promo on...
Yeah, exactly.
I can't remember. Was there a promo on Raw Monday? I can't remember.
From Bryan?
This being Wednesday.
I don't remember if there was.
Was there? Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
I love his character now. I think it's like, you know, like this. He is...
Yeah. Well, you used to be straight edge.
Yeah, I'm not anymore.
Okay.
No, I am. I guess indulge in the herbal substances.
You're not a vegan, though.
No, I was vegetarian, though, for like a long time, and vegan for like 2 weeks.
The straight edge.
And CM Punk just went vegan. Like,
Oh, really?
A couple weeks ago. Well, he eats eggs, but he's given up all everything else.
Do the straight edge community, do they have a term for someone who sways off the path?
An edge breaker or a sellout?
An edge breaker.
an edge breaker or sellout.
Edge breaker. It sounds like a mint or something.
It really varies on person to person who took it seriously. Like, I never really, when my friends would sell out or break edge, like, I would be hurt at the time because I was like, it means I don't have someone to hang out with and be straight edge anymore. But, like, it didn't really bother me, but there are some people that really bother.
So. Right.
We continue on with the Radicals in the back, and Eddie is all caught up with China at this point and says how she can't resist him. And then they cut to China and Too Cool watching this on the monitor. And China is disgusted at Eddie Guerrero. It's like, I am a woman. I would never just put my body out there for another man. This is disgusting. Unless it's a parody. Then it's classy.
Unless I'm getting paid.
Yes.
Well, but that being said, what would China really do in 2011? You know, there's only so many ways you can, like, get that kick at, you know, like your comeback can, as it were.
It would be more depressing if it was like, you know, some like fucking ridiculous porn company. That's
at least
like,
it's vivid.
It's like, vivid, man. It's like it's the
WWE.
It's
of
the top of the food chain of porn.
Yeah, like she could be out there in like this, you know, CZW of porn. Oh my god,
man. With
or the XPW. Of
yeah,
porn.
The Rob Zakari,
Rob Black, right? Yeah,
she's already done the home video route, so now she's moved.
Well, that's
up.
True, but that's what she called the rape tape. She said she didn't consent to that tape.
Okay,
but.
Well, that makes that tape even more disgusting. Like, there's only...
Maybe that's what Hogan can refer to this tape as, under the knowledge.
No, I bet you Hogan's going to sign the deal with Vivid.
There's a chance he could.
He's definitely going to sign the deal. The only thing the only reason he might not is if he's hoping to have another, you know, Disney icon type run. You know,
it could hurt him for sponsorship opportunities.
But I think it's
gonna. Sure.
I think it's already hurt. If Ric Flair can sign a deal with Coke in 2012, Hulk Hogan can do a porno and survive... In the public's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn against China and Too Cool. Welcome to the WWF, guys. They do a dance spot early on with Brian Christopher and China, which is a strong argument for China to never have to move her body in awkward positions ever again.
Very awkward. I will say she is one sensuous woman. This is like the least erotic thing I've ever seen.
She dances like a man.
It was like the Elaine dance from Seinfeld. That's pretty much what she was recreating here. Brian Christopher gets knocked off the apron by Saturn before he can hit his hip hop drop. The Radicals get the heat on Scotty, and it leads to a spot where China gets posted by Eddie, and that's not a sexual term. Christopher hits a vertical suplex to Eddie on the floor, and then Scotty goes for the worm to both Saturn and Malenko. And Ross yells, "Not the double worm!" For WrestleMania, this is what you're getting, folks, for $50. There was a spot here where Jack Doan pulled China away from Eddie as the Radicals double-teamed Scotty. Saturn hits a top rope elbow drop onto Scotty. Then Eddie comes in but gets crotched on the top rope. China comes in. Eddie runs away. And that was the whole story of the match, China trying to get to Eddie. And then she hit two handspring back elbows, one to Malenko and then one to Saturn in the corner. And then a double low blow spot to both men as Eddie then attacks China. China then counters a powerbomb and nearly decapitates Eddie here by dropping him for her own powerbomb. And in mid-move, her pants rip.
I didn't notice that. Wow.
I did kind of notice it, but I thought it might have been planned.
The thong was just hanging out here. And then China grabs Eddie by the balls, goes to military press Eddie, and struggles to get him up. And then a sleeper is applied, and then she drops down Eddie for the pin at 9 minutes and 38 seconds.
Welcome to the WWE.
Poor Eddie.
Your future world champion.
You're putting over China at WrestleMania.
There you go.
China was over.
She was very over at the time, but boy, was she terrible.
I complained about the finish, but you know, like I should be complaining about the feud because this was a logical finish to the feud.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, but when she did those handsprings, elbow into the corner,
that looked pretty good.
And the crowd was like just erupting. Yeah. And then she was barely in there too, in there for what she needed to be in.
They
there.
Made China look tremendous with that finish.
Yeah, she was incredibly over at this time. So I mean, and she was the most over person in this match.
Well, just like she's like, were you guys saying last week on the show, fresh from Third Rock from the Sun, or did they say that on?
Oh here? Yeah, off that. Yeah, that huge exposure. I mean, she did quite a lot of media at the time.
Well,
like,
she
did.
And she was like dating or went on a couple dates with what's his name, Joey from. And sync around then?
Really?
Yeah.
I thought she was with Hunter.
He was like, I have a big crush on her. She said on Much Music and they went on
a kayfabe date.
They went on like, cause, yeah, I think it was like a kayfabe date, but they went on like, and she's subsequently said he was like an asshole, but thought she.
This was at the peak of his popularity.
NSYNC, yeah, like not now. Like now it would be like, well, now he probably still dates Hunter.
He just did the spin cycle a few weeks ago, so that's how far his star has fallen. I lied earlier. I said the tag match was the highlight of the show. Wrong. The fan contest to give away tickets to WrestleMania was my highlight. Mm-hmm. Did everyone see this?
I saw this.
I didn't see this.
Okay, so the deal was they were doing WrestleMania all day long, where you could watch 8 hours of lead up to WrestleMania.
Which you paid for?
No, I did not. You? I did not get the all day long package.
Yeah, you got the post show. It was on the
The post show though was like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So it wasn't much of a post show. So they go to this woman's house in Allentown, Pennsylvania. She opens the door.
The neo-Nazi capital of America, apparently.
The neo-Nazi capital of America.
Allentown, Pennsylvania. Yeah. That's what I hear.
Hold on, Billy Kidman.
And also the best record store in the world.
Whoa.
Does not sell any Nazi records, completely unrelated. Okay. But Double Decker Records is my favorite record store in the world down there.
Fun facts.
Well,
and Piss Jeans, which used to be in a band called the Ultimate Warriors, a wrestling-themed grindcore band.
No way.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the guitar player, who was the lead singer in Ultimate Warriors, was a wrestler. He used to wrestle. I think he even did some CZW stuff and maybe some like Ring of Honor type things, but he was a mass wrestler.
Well, during this video package, there was no Klan B-roll as they got to the entrance. And the woman opens up the door, and she is wearing a black T-shirt with bold font that says Rock on her shirt. This was like right out of the kayfabe shirts that they've released, that you were such a big fan of the design.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
And she loses her mind because she has won tickets. And then first they show her husband, who's got this long straggly hair, and he's wearing a Steve Austin shirt with no sleeves. And then she hugs her child, who couldn't have been more than 8 years old, with one hand as her other hand had a cigarette. the stereotype that was prevalent in this video.
You see this, and you're like, I guess it is only 10%. That's like kind of a smart community of wrestling
fans. And you wonder why wrestlers keep their distance, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So they flew him on a jet to WrestleMania, and then they show them in the crowd. Husband still got his sleeveless Austin T-shirt on,
which means they didn't shower. Like they didn't. They were like,
no. It really looked that way. Either that, or they staged everything. Of course.
Yeah, they could have just staged everything. Oh. Like, what are the odds that they both answer the door? Well, pretty good in wrestling T-shirts. Like,
be ready.
And now it would be like, it's funny because now you're like, no one would answer the door wearing like those shirts now. And it's like, yeah, maybe.
You think.
But then Affliction gear, they'd probably like come to the door wearing like an Affliction shirt, and then the wife would be in like some sort of other ridiculous MMA gear thing, and they'd be like, what? We did it! We did it! We're going!
The whole family's
there.
We just happened to meet, yes. Oh, man. And they cut back. Are you done with this segment? Because my highlight for this segment was to come. They cut back to this this woman in a live attendance, and she's holding a sign. She even had the time to make a sign that said, IWWFN won this ticket. And the whole time she's just like, woo! Thinking like nobody could hear her. Meanwhile, the mic was right on her, and this was the most annoying sound.
When you put up a sign at a wrestling event, people hate it.
They do.
Santino's like grandmother, who was sitting in front of me at this last the house show, had like a Santino sign, and every time she put it up, because they were in the very front row, which is right in front of me, but I didn't care because I knew it was Santino's grandmother. But people would be like, "Put down the sign! Put down the sign!"
That's hilarious.
That's awesome. Santino's grandmother. Shane McMahon is with The Big Show, who had a T-shirt that read, Big Nasty Bastard.
Yeah, like Old Dirty Bastard.
Yeah.
Big
Nasty. Oh, yeah. Huh.
I thought it was maybe... It was this
BNB, Austin, it didn't really take off for him.
Was Austin Powers 2 out by this point? Because I was also thinking, like, Big Fat Bastard. Wasn't that one of
them? Yeah, it did come out by this
fat
point.
Fat Bastard, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the Al Jolson of my people. You know, the jazz singer of my people, the fat people.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
That was that reference. Sorry. Got a little surreal there and cerebral.
Well, we can't relate. We're the opposite.
No, I know.
Big Show says he's going to win the title tonight, and he's going to unplug the most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
Whoa.
I'm going to unplug you.
Kill
Horrible.
Him. Kill him.
Horrible. Bob Backlund and Kurt Angle, they show them from Sunday Night Heat, where Angle attacks Backlund with the cross-faced chicken wing. And then we see Kurt Angle speaking to Tommy, the security guy, to protect him after he wins his match, because a lot of fans are going to want to get to him. So, Kurt Angle, a funny moment here with the security guy. Then Chris Jericho comes out, cuts a promo. He says, I cannot guarantee winning a title tonight, but I will leave as the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, and Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit are going to leave with a T-shirt. And that T-shirt will read, I went to Anaheim, California, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt and a Y2J beating.
I've
got to say, these back-to-back reviews we've done the last 2 weeks, this Chris Jericho character at the time. And listen, he in his book talks about he was going through. They hated him at this time in the company. I mean, he took a lot of flack, and man, I was not a fan of this promo style.
I remember my friend used to do a radio show on the Iceberg way back when, or I think it was Too Cool for Radio back then, even before the Iceberg. No, it was the Iceberg. And the Law would record just before. And I remember being in there in the Law at the time, and they were talking about the Chris Jericho China feud where Chris Jericho broke China's hands with a hammer. Mm-hmm. And at their time, they were like, well, I guess that's the end for Jericho. That's Jericho's run pretty much finalized, and we'll see him go back to WCW now or go somewhere else. And it's like, yeah, but it's crazy how, you know, what he just on talent, because everyone loved him in the crowd. Everyone in the crowd's like,
he was over at the time, but I mean, he had to overcome a lot of political issues in the back and people that just wanted him to work a different style. Yeah. They wanted him to cut different promos. I mean, it was like everything that got him to the WWF, when he got there, they were like, change everything.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was a very frustrating period. I mean, there was Jericho recounts this where it was like there was a period where, I mean, Vince wanted to release him. He's like, you're the most overpaid guy in this company. You're not worth anything that we signed you to.
Yeah, so. It's crazy because he's so amazing. It's like, yeah. Just like, so good. Like, yeah. He's worth everyone else's paycheck, minus the guys in the ladder match up until this point.
I remember going into WrestleMania. This was the match I was most stoked for. Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, and Chris Jericho. You knew you were getting with Jericho and Benoit. And Kurt Angle certainly wasn't the level of worker he'd be a year from then. But you could see this guy was really clicking. And being in there with those two, I just thought this was going to be the greatest match of all time. And it wasn't. It was a two-fall contest. First fall was for the Intercontinental title. Second for the European title. Kurt defending both of those titles. And the first match starts off with Benoit attacking Angle on the floor. Jericho goes for a drop kick off the ropes, but Benoit stops him. Crowd was very, very quiet here. They were not reacting to anything. There was a double underhook by Jericho onto Angle, onto his knee. And then Jericho gets tossed off the top to the announce table by Benoit. Jericho later comes back with a camel clutch applied to Benoit. Crowd's still silent. And then Angle counters a double underhook and applies the chicken wing, which they had been pushing all this time. No reaction. And then Benoit tosses Angle into the crowd, and he hits a top rope headbutt to pin Jericho. 7 minutes and 56 seconds. And then we go right into our second fall. And in hindsight, I think it was a big mistake to break this up rather than just do one big match.
Yeah.
And this crowd just, they weren't into any of this.
And I wonder why that is. Could it be because the characters weren't over or because of the match itself?
I don't know. It just, even the match, it's just like, man, I've seen so much better from all three of these guys.
I completely agree. To me, like, it felt like this match, it seemed kind of rushed, and maybe that was due to the time constraints, but it also just seemed like a constant, it was very fast, very aggressive, very high pace, but it just seemed like a flat, flat pace.
There were some like weird botchy stuff too, like from these guys. Like there's that one, I think maybe it's where it's like a German suplex to Kurt Angle.
The Dragon suplex.
The Dragon, yeah, and it leads to the pinning predicament. But it's like his shoulders aren't down, and it looks like Angle took it.
Yeah,
he even grabs his throat and rolls out of the ring because it looks like it's all on the top of the head.
Don't worry, your neck will be fine, Kurt.
You'll never have problems with it, and it's not going to lead to any serious substance problems at all.
Both of you guys, your necks will be fine.
Yeah, both of you.
Match number two begins for the European title. All three are laid out. Jericho goes for the walls to Angle, but Benoit breaks it up. Jericho hits a spinning heel kick that sends Benoit to the floor, and then Jericho struggles to hit a double powerbomb to Kurt. Jericho did this early on in his WWF run, but quickly realized, all right, I'm not fucking my back up for this spot. We will move on from it. And Benoit comes back in, and this is where we saw the three Germans, with the final one being a bridging pin that Kurt broke up. Jericho misses Benoit with a flying forearm, takes out Tim White, and then Benoit with a cross face, and Jericho's tapping, but the referee is out. Jericho comes back with the walls, and Angle attacks Jericho with the title, and then Benoit misses a top rope headbutt to Kurt, and Jericho hits the Lion Salt to pin Benoit. 5:43 in the second match, with the storyline that Kurt lost both titles without being pinned. And I just thought, really, disappointing match. To me, the biggest disappointment on this card was these three just having a very forgettable match.
And just before the end, Lawler calls Benoit Malenko.
Oh.
And then JR's like, it's Benoit.
All these white guys look
Benoit,
the same.
All right, Benoit.
And that's that was that, everyone. And I think, to be honest, I think the crowd, I mean, every match other than Terry and Cal were these multiple person matches. Mm-hmm. I think it was just burned out on these multi-person matches by this point too.
And also, this was the first one that actually had like moves leading to other moves and
yeah.
Like, well, I guess maybe the ladder match, but Everything else had just been like kind of culminations of storylines.
Yeah. By no means was this like a train wreck in the ring, but it was just the crowd killed it. And I mean, I've just, there was
expectations
just
were very much
very high.
Yeah.
Michael Cole's with Vince McMahon, says that Rock is confident whether Vince is in his corner or not, and he guarantees that tonight I will make it right with my family. Ooh, the tease.
Yeah.
What will make it right mean?
What will he do?
That means don't worry about the match because there's an angle coming. Hunter and Stephanie are in their locker room. Hunter basically cuts a promo on his wife with like all his catchphrases and proving that he'll be the best. And Stephanie just stood there. It felt very unnatural. I mean, this is not a conversation a husband and wife would have. I am the game.
Who knows? We got to wait till their sex tape leaks and then we'll know for
real. Oh, God. Could you imagine that?
Wow.
Some real weird power dynamics in that loving relationship.
Suck it, the Hunter story. X-Pac, Road Dogg, and Torrey come out, and Road Dogg, I swear, guys, he was a heel here, but he wasn't aware of it.
No.
His heel promo consisted of sending out a birthday wish to his son, mentioning pot in California, and asking everyone to yell, suck it, and the highlight of this being they cut to a fan barking and Lawler doing the sound effects of a dog barking here.
What do you do, though, if you're a Road Dogg? Like, your whole identity is based off of that whole spiel.
Well, you don't give the fans the opportunity to do that. You know, you come out and you, like, you say, hey, instead of when you guys want me to do this
right.
thing and say, suck it,
yeah.
I'm not going to do that. And you do, like, the R-Truth when R-Truth went heel, and you don't get people to do the what. You turn it against them.
Fuck it. That's what he yells to the fans.
Yeah.
It would have been cheered even more.
X-Pac and Road Dogg against Rikishi and Kane.
I guess Billy Gunn was injured at this time?
Yes. Yeah, he was. He had fucked up his shoulder at the prior month or so. So Paul Bearer is in Kane's corner. The highlight early on was where he just yells to Torrey,
you're Jezebel.
You go to hell.
You Jezebel, you're going to hell.
And then he no-sold a slap from Torrey. And I don't know if this crowd was just so bloodthirsty they wanted to see a woman get attacked, but man, did Torrey have heat here. I mean, they just want to see the. We saw this on Raw where they teased the choke slam from Kane. I mean, they want to see Torrey just get killed.
They wanted to see this woman have a giant Polynesian man's ass rubbed in her face.
Absolutely. Well, Torrey was the Eve Torres of her time.
She was.
She was the one who had cheated on Kane.
Rikishi goes for the stink face to Road Dogg right away, and then Torrey comes into the ring to run away from Kane, and she backs into Rikishi and then into the corner, and the crowd is just so super hot here for the stink face, but X-Pac brings her out. DX goes to leave to the back, but Kane and Rikishi stop them, and then X-Pac delivers a ton of kicks to Rikishi into the corner and then the body. Rikishi comes back with a kind of a press into the air into an ace crusher onto X-Pac. Kane comes in, he grabs Torrey by the throat and just tosses her dangerously into the corner. I don't know if she was supposed to just take the bump into the corner, but she like slipped and the back of her head slammed into the bottom turnbuckle. This looked extremely painful. And Rikishi hits the stink face. Then Kane hits a tombstone to X-Pac for the win. 4 minutes and 16 seconds. As Ross says that Torrey has a terminal case of ass breath. Terminal. And then Too Cool comes out into the ring with Rikishi, Kane, and Paul Bearer. The crowd is doing their whole clap. And then they tease dancing when the San Diego Chicken runs in, and they're pretending it's Pete Rose. And they go to dance, and eventually Kane grabs the chicken by the throat, and it leads to Pete Rose running from the back with a bat to attack Kane. And Pete Rose takes a choke slam. He gets crotch chopped by Paul Bearer, and then they drag him into the corner, and Rikishi delivers a stink face to Pete Rose.
Well, at first I was wondering why this match only went 4 minutes.
Perfect time.
Considering the people involved.
Dude, this match to me was booked perfectly.
The match was
they gave everyone what they wanted.
The match was meaningless, and it was really a setup for what was to come, and that was the Pete Rose involvement for this year.
They love Pete Rose.
Yeah, they do.
I guess he's in the Hall of Fame now for them, right?
Yes.
I thought the Pete Rose stuff was funny.
This was like the third year in a row they had him do something with Kane.
I found it really amusing for some reason, just seeing Kane stand there as Too Cool was doing their dance. Like, Kane, this demonic, dark, twisted character just standing in the corner while this ridiculousness, this chicken, was like dancing in the
Well, that's why I think that as soon as you have these two types of groups together, it really ruins the dark character. Because, you can't really come back from that, you know, being a sadistic monster and hanging with a man in a sumo wrestler's trunks and, two guys that do terrible Backstreet Boys style dancing.
Yeah. Of course, at the time coming off the storyline where Tori revealed that he was impotent from the fire. Yeah. Somehow, tough to be a monster when you're impotent.
He's still around. Every time they he takes a break and comes back, people believe him as his monster.
And he's nailed plenty of women over the years. So
he has.
There was
Lita
storyline. There was
we've talked about this. Kane, you feel
you're
the
saying
love
many
tonight.
Loves of Kane. You want to see that on a DVD? So,
no, Kane, you feel the love tonight.
He's an inspiration to people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you get knocked down, keep getting up. Keep getting up.
Literally.
They will find a place for you every year in WrestleMania, no matter what.
Kevin Kelly's with The Rock. He talks about working for the last year to get his title back. He says he would do it all again, and tonight it's all about the title. Very good promo from The Rock. And then we do the celebrity roll call. This was the worst roll call I've ever seen, where none of the people on camera corresponded with the names being read by Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. But Michael Clark Duncan was there. Martin Short with Dustin Diamond photobombing. Mo Vaughn, who was never shown on camera, from the Boston Red Sox. And French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun.
Jesus, a real A-list crowd here.
Yeah, this was
well, they're close to Hollywood,
at their
right?
peak.
Yeah.
Short drive to Anaheim for all these celebs.
Yeah.
And then we go to the main event. Triple H, accompanied by Stephanie, taking on Mick Foley with Linda, Big Show and Shane, and The Rock with Vince McMahon in his corner. Lots of entrances here.
Why does The Rock come out? Well, obviously I know why, but why does The Rock come out before Triple H?
Triple H was a
champion, I guess. That makes sense. But it just ruins Triple H's, I know they always...
They dim the lights for him.
Yeah.
They give him that. I like it when the champion comes out.
I like him
last.
Too, but I guess it also for a live crowd, though, when I always think the person comes out the most. I always think the heels coming out first prepares an audience for a bigger pop when the babyface comes out.
And that's what they do these days.
Yeah.
Jim Ross played up Mick Foley finally being in the main event of WrestleMania and says it's his last night in the ring. Big Show, his fighting gear consisted of a T-shirt, his combed hair, and a gold chain around his neck. Bit of a
Samoa Joe
gimmick.
Vibe.
Yeah, he had this weird identity crisis.
Samoa Joe's necklace. I don't think he even wears it anymore.
Yeah, like that Samoan necklace.
Yeah,
the
metal beads with the black beads.
Well, AJ used to wear it was his wedding ring or something on his necklace.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, at least Big Show wasn't wearing a WWF T-shirt.
That's true.
Joe. At least he had
a weird hat that makes his head look like a penis with a half rolled condom down. That camo hat he's wearing these days.
Oh man. Yes.
Foley. Foley jumps onto the back of Big Show, who just lands on his back, crushing Mick Foley. They do a triple team spot on Big Show to get him off his feet, and then Show gets hit in the back with a chair by Mick into a rock bottom, and Big Show's main event of WrestleMania lasted 4 minutes and 49 seconds.
Which is a good call.
Mercifully, yeah. I think everyone at this point was like, okay, now it can start.
They got rid of the big men spots with early on. And took out the least mobile and least over guy of the three.
I think this should be in Cody's videos. I can't remember if they played this on Monday.
No, they only played a few. They played the Akebono and then
the restaurant,
New York, and the Mayweather. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one was 4 minutes in the main event.
He can say, though, that he main evented a WrestleMania. He's on the marquee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If this is what main eventing WrestleMania means, 4 minutes, less than most of your TV matches. Uh-huh. Then great. Congratulations, Big Show, who would be in OVW in a few months from this point. They tease alliances between the three, and it ends with Rock and Foley attacking Hunter for the pop. Rock misses Hunter and takes out Foley with the ring bell, and then Hunter sends Rock into the steps. Foley brings out the barbed wire baseball bat, but gets knocked to the floor.
Did they establish that this would be no DQ?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, too. But I think if you have a four-way dance, is it automatically no DQ?
Yeah, it's like...
It shouldn't be.
How do you...
Well, you DQ the guy who uses the weapon.
Yeah. It's WrestleMania. You can't do a DQ. Go on. It's
amazing.
Liberal use of
three
the
minutes
rules.
In, they're like, yeah, DQ. Everyone go home. Here comes Limp Bizkit to play us out.
At one point, we see Socko applied to Hunter, and then Rock runs in, and as Ross called it, delivered a belt shot. It's a championship, not a belt.
We'll get to that.
Yes.
goes for the people's elbow, but Foley then hits Sako to Rock. And then Hunter stealing China's spot with the double low blow to Rock and Foley. And they continue to fight with Foley, and this is where Foley, his big WrestleMania main event moment, decided to ascend the turnbuckle and deliver a flying forearm to the announce table onto Rock. And Foley soared, and Foley fell short of his target. And this was a...
Took the edge in the ribs, it looked like.
Yeah, it looked like he knocked himself out of the main event of WrestleMania. And the only thing worse was... Let's show a replay in case you missed that.
They
showed a replay of this, and poor Mick.
In his defense, though, that table did not want to break for anyone.
No, but...
Because that next spot where they're trying to break it...
But he was way
he
off.
Ran he ran into the side off. Of the table. I mean, there was any physics major... If you're a physics major, please don't email me saying, no, there is a way you could have done that.
So then he misses, but Hunter decides, you know what? I'm gonna break this thing.
Yeah.
So he jumps off of the second announce table.
Doesn't break.
Climbs back up now, and then he's standing on the announce table, but I guess a corner of it collapses.
Yeah.
So then he decides, get out of the way, Hugo. I'm gonna climb the barricade, and I'm gonna jump it. And he finally collapses this table in like the most saddest table I've ever seen.
Yeah.
This was that table was the metaphor for this whole show.
At least one sympathetic fan gave a holy shit.
Yeah. I wrote that down. You literally one person yelled out holy shit.
Everyone wished this was the ECW. Yeah. Every single person in that arena wished it was ECW.
Unfortunately, the boom mic was moved away from the crowd for the rest of his sentence was that fucking sucked. Back in the ring, Hunter hits a pedigree to Foley, and Hunter allowed Mick to kick out of the pedigree here for a huge reaction, because no one did.
And I thought JR was, like, you know, really became the MVP of this match here, just putting over the fact this was Foley's last match. He's just saying, you know, kick out, Mick. This is your last time. I thought he was doing a great job, more so than any build they gave Mick this entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Triple H has got a chair, and Mick has met his way back up. Mick Foley hit the side of the head by a vile chair shot by the WWF champion. Come on, Mick.
Come on, I don't know where he can go from here, but then
don't do it. Pedigree on the chair.
I told you.
Oh, God. Mick, kick out. You can do it, Mick.
Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Oh.
Foley's negotiating, though, on spots was a little flawed here, where he's like, okay, you let me kick out of the pedigree, I'll let you hit a fucking home run with my head with a chair shot. Oh, my God. Hunter just murdered this guy with a chair shot and then hit another pedigree. They cut to Linda. No, come on, Mick.
Oh, that was so brutal.
This woman never needs to talk. Anyway, and Mick was eliminated. Yeah, Jim Ross played it up huge. They gave chance of Mick as he left, and as he was walking up the aisle, he turned around, ran back, and he hit Hunter in the head with the barbed wire bat to set up a near fall spot with Rock, but Hunter kicked out. Rock and Hunter then, they had like a 15-minute match together to the finish here. This was great.
Which is the one I missed, because that's when YouTube pulled... That's the one that YouTube has pulled off for being in violation of WWE copyright.
Jerks. So they fight up the aisle, and Hunter drops the steps onto Rock, who had lifted them. Rock hit a chair, and it landed on top of Rock, and Jim Ross just yelled,
Jesus criminy!
He's only 27. He can't continue. He'll fight again.
Just let him go.
Jesus criminy. Rock counters a pedigree with a back body drop, sending Hunter to the floor. They fight into the crowd. Rock hits a vertical suplex, putting Hunter through an announce table. Then we get into the overbooking, where Shane returned and attacked Vince from behind. He grabs a monitor and hits Vince in the head, where he blades. Stephanie had the worst facials in wrestling at this point, where they cut to her, and it's like, okay, be shocked. And stay shocked for 2 minutes in case our camera doesn't catch it. She just looks so dumb here. Vince fights off Shane with his terrible punches, and then a low blow to his son, which is just weird. Unprotected chair shot then to Vince from Shane, and then Shane comes back, and Michael Clark Duncan is just yelling at Shane, like, how can you do this? And Shane just, like, does this, like, feint towards Michael Clark Duncan as if he was going to hit him, and then keeps going, and Duncan is just pissed here at Shane. Like, he was ready to go here. He's like...
he was the most entertaining part about this.
Michael Clark Duncan was great here.
Yeah.
Vince is bleeding, and he gets help to the back, and then Hunter gets the barbed wire bat and hits The Rock with it. Shane comes in with a chair, but Rock catapults Shane into Hunter into Shane, and then hits the Rock bottom to Hunter. Vince comes back to attack Shane and sends him to the floor, and then Vince picks up the chair with both men standing dazed, and he does the Vince Russo turn where he goes to hit Hunter but turns his hips and hits Rock, and everyone is shocked. But Rock kicks out of here for another pop, and then Vince hits another chair shot to Rock, and Hunter pins the Rock. This went over 36 minutes, and Vince and Stephanie hug. Shane joins them after these two killed each other.
Yeah.
And then Rock comes back, hits a Rock bottom to Vince, lays out Shane, and then a Rock bottom and people's elbow to Stephanie after she slaps him to end the show. So, this was just the McMahon show here
in
the main
event. It really went downhill after the Foley elimination and after Vince and Shane started to get into it. Not to mention, like, the booking. How did it make sense at all?
Yeah, like, who wants these people in the main event of WrestleMania? Like,
they do.
Linda? Well, yeah, exactly.
And I always enjoyed, you know, Vince as kind of just, like, a sidebar to some of the stories, but it was like when we got to the main event, it was like that's when this stuff was not needed. This was like this overshadowed everyone in the match.
When they poured themselves physically into the match, that's when it went too far. But just going back, like why book a spot where Vince attacks Hunter? Why book the spot where Vince attacks Shane? If you're going to do this beforehand, how does any of this make sense?
I thought it was just really convoluted and just so hard to follow.
No, because way they weren't really attacking each other because wrestling's not real. So,
they were pulling their punches,
so they knew. It's like when they hit the other guys, that's when it's real.
It's all our plan.
Yeah.
Let's kill each other and you wallop me on the head with a chair.
Yeah. Make it look really bloody. I'm gonna.
Yeah, and this match went way too long. 36 minutes. That's crazy.
I will say it's worthwhile to watch simply for the Foley stuff in the middle of it. And for me, that was really it.
Big Show had no place in this match. It would have been fine with a three-way. I mean, the original plan was a singles match, and I think this would have been better as just a singles match.
Between Rock and Hunter?
Rock and Hunter.
Mm.
And Big Show could have been the hardcore battle royal.
Sure, why not?
That was WrestleMania 2000. I would certainly put this in the bottom tier of WrestleManias. I kind of judge them kind of based on match quality and historical significance. And, you know, WrestleMania 1 was pretty brutal in the ring, worse than this, but historically, it's such an important show. So I put this one, like, right near the bottom, if not at the bottom. This is like WrestleMania 11 level.
Bad. Yeah, I'd put this...
The ladder match is what saves this show, and that's why I can't pan this entire show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most things with the suffix of 2000 from that era were not very good.
That's it. It was such a hot period.
Rumble was good.
No, but I just mean like even like think about Blues Brothers 2000.
Oh.
Think about one of my favorite bands of all time, Integrity. They redubbed themselves Integrity 2000 and added electronic parts.
Techno Team 2000 with Eric Watts.
LOD.
Yeah.
LOD 2000.
LOD 2000, you know.
Lame. Not a great WrestleMania. I think the best thing to come out of this WrestleMania was the N64 video game. WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah.
It was way better. I got way more entertainment out of that N64 game. I'm going to give this show a 2.5 out of 10.
Wow, that's really rough.
Wow.
I know.
Honestly, for me, like, for the Foley stuff alone and that ladder match, I have to give it at least a 6.
And I actually kind of like did. I loved Jericho's promo, and the ladder match is incredible, and yeah. So I'm gonna say 6-2. Yeah. Like it's really this period without Stone Cold Steve Austin and like Rock. I don't know. He like looking back on it. Like I guess he became it later, but he still didn't feel like the leader at this time. Like it just feels without Stone Cold, like or without Shawn Michaels, or without Bret. I guess was long gone by this point, but like you just don't have that figurehead of the company. Triple H will never be that. Even as much as he thinks he is, I don't think he'll ever be that figurehead for that company.
Yeah, it was amazing when you look back at 2000 with Austin gone, and I mean, they didn't skip a beat. I mean, they did incredible business that year, and this show did over 900,000 buys. So at the end of the day, I mean that record would be beaten. But
it was a hot product.
This was the highest bought WrestleMania of all time up until this point.
And they probably didn't have to pay. Like this year, I bet you it's costing them way more to put on than this one would have. Like what they had to put out versus what they took home as far as gate. Like they might get to 1 million buys this year, but they're spending millions and millions of dollars
on advertising. And I mean, even the whole set.
The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock is going to cost a lot more in 2012 than he did in 2000.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was our review, everyone. And before we go, we'll do feedback at the end. But we have a bunch of stuff that you have thrown out there, Damian.
I've teased some stuff, I guess.
Well, let's start off with the house show and your overall experience going here to the Raw house show.
The Raw house show was a lot of fun. You know, like it's amazing the difference between going to a Raw house show and the TNA house show in the same building. Like I went to both of them at Rico. And Rico Coliseum, what would you say? It's like 15,000?
No. It holds like 7.
Oh, 7, really? Yeah, okay, yeah, wow. So it's not that big. It was full for this one. It was like, as far as I could tell, it was a full show. House shows are weird and really interesting because, you know, like the feud between like John Cena and Kane is long over, but you're seeing it, you know, still playing out live.
This is a straight match, right?
It wasn't an ambulance match, but it was a last man standing match.
Oh, okay.
So, and so all the matches were fun. It was like, what was the guy that was around for Nexus, the Hootie Who guy? Remember the big
Michael Tarver?
No, he broke his leg. He was a white guy, big.
Skip Sheffield.
Skip Sheffield.
Oh, he was there.
He's T-Rex now? T-Rex?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
At first I was like, it's Tyler Black.
Tyler Rex.
No, it wasn't Tyler Rex. No, it was that dude, Skip Sheffield.
But his name is T-Rex as well?
Or T-Rec or something like that.
Okay. Something
yeah,
like
they're bringing it. I was getting popcorn at the time, so when he first came out. But it's like, he's kind of got a Goldberg vibe, big time.
Really?
Yeah, like, and...
I look forward to him coming back, actually.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I actually didn't mind his gimmick before, like the guy that doesn't understand why people don't like him. He just wants to be a likable kind of guy. And
you mean on NXT?
When he was after NXT, after the Nexus stuff, just before he broke his leg, when he was coming out and being like, remember, I was the guy that used to say hoo-de-hoo, and none of you guys do. And he was like, hoo-de-hoo, and no one would answer. And it was like, I kind of like that. But now he's like a Goldberg dominant monster.
He was the powerhouse of that group. And,
yeah.
They were really pushing him up until he got
injured.
Maybe
the best thing that happened was he got injured and didn't suffer the fate of pretty much all Nexus outside of Barrett.
Justin Gabriel.
Yeah. Alex Riley wrestled with Mason Ryan. Oof. And I'm not going to say who, but a certain wrestler's family that happened to be sitting in front of me.
You mentioned it already.
Yeah, I know, but I don't feel bad about it. But they were like, yeah, he's like a personality hole. He used to team with our relative. And anyway, Santino's family was sitting in front of me at this event. Oh. And they were awesome.
A lot of families.
They were amazing. They were amazing. They were, and it was great because like all the wrestlers would play to Santino's family.
Oh,
so
that's
they're
funny.
And because we're sitting one row behind them, they would play to us, me and my friends, by coincidence.
Did CM Punk play to you?
No, CM Punk, who I got to meet earlier that day, he did at the end of the match come up to me and give me a high five as he was leaving.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, it was like kind of a cool moment for me as like a huge CM Punk fan. And you know, I got to say, like, witnessing Chris Jericho and CM Punk and even John Cena in person and stuff was like awesome. It was like a really... I could not do the "you suck" chant to Cena.
What
were
reactions like to Cena in Toronto?
Like you'd expect TV, you know, like the "Cena sucks, let's go Cena." And right behind me, I had a group
John Cena's family.
Well, pretty much, like a group of little kids who had all met John Cena earlier, I think, because he signs autographs all day. Him and CM Punk just sign like thousands of autographs that they sell and all this stuff.
I hear all the time about Cena. It's like all these times. I mean, he's like a genuine guy.
He seems like a really good
guy.
He's
so high demand and makes a lot of time for people.
The people were not... Yeah, it was like Cena sucks. You know, like what you'd expect, right? Cena sucks, let's go Cena. And the kids behind me... Because, you know, once again, you forget living in sort of the internet bubble that there's kids out there that believe what WWE tells them. That, like, this person's great. And, like, Kelly comes out and they're like... Oh, yay, Kelly! Yay, Kelly! All these kids. And then, of course, there's also, like, older sort of smarty Mark type people there too that are like, you suck, Kelly. Run the ropes. Learn to run the ropes. And just like all just like the usual like the heckles. And
we're all marks.
Exactly. And you see these little kids positioned beside these people. Great. But yeah, I had a really fun time. It's a really cool show to go see, those house shows, because it's quick. You get to see all the people you wanted to see. But I'm surprised that, you know, they lose out on the monetary value of having some of their lower tier guys accessible, you know, like have a mini fan access, have people like out there signing autographs, like not John Cena, not CM Punk, but have like...
Well, I read that they started doing what TNA does, and that's have... guys come out during intermission to sign autographs if you buy their shirt. And didn't they do this at the?
I didn't see. Well, because I didn't go. The merch area was crazy. Oh, okay. They believe me. They don't need any help making money.
Yeah, because I know for a guy I know who bought a Ziggler shirt, and that was part of it. Was that if you bought a shirt, you got to meet Ziggler? At intermission.
Because I was
going to
say
like
he is the one person I walked away. He is the future of that business. As long as everything keeps going the way it is, he was fantastic playing to the crowd and. You know, amazing. Him watching him and CM Punk was fantastic. If they really give him a good push, turn him into like someone really despicable.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with him is he's a likable person. You really want to like him.
Maybe potentially a babyface.
He could be a good, but he's also like he is the heel, right?
He is, but I totally could see him eventually one day being a babyface. I think he's much more comfortable as a heel, but he's like I look at that guy right now and I can't think of any weaknesses. Like I don't understand why, you know, yes, you've got to sell WrestleMania with a lot of these big names, but to me I think it'd be really helpful that, you know, use this WrestleMania to catapult a guy like that to a next level because he's right on the cusp.
Well, and instead of building a feud between John Cena and The Rock, like why don't you build a feud for the next year of him versus CM Punk. You know, maybe it doesn't get to WrestleMania, maybe it's not that, but maybe you get it like you get it over to the new year, to 2013, where you build him up to make him a despicable person. Because him and CM Punk work so great together when they're clicking, and both of them are so
They've got to be careful, though, because they've put him so many times now as he's the setup guy for the real feud.
Real feud,
and he's, like, he was the background character for the Laurinaitis Punk feud, and it's like you've seen him in that spot for so much, and I don't think he's by any means tainted yet, but if you keep him in that level for too long, they're not going to accept him. Like, that's where I think Kofi's at right now, where I don't think people will take him as anything above where he is right now, because they've had the start and stop push with him so many
times.
Well,
but I think I think Kofi's still one of those characters that they've never let. He's never been given the opportunity to develop into like a human being. He's just been this like amorphous babyface blob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas like that's a perfect you know like yeah it's just like guy. Oh it's, he's a nice guy. Whereas like Ziggler has the personality and people are just cheering him. The shirt looked fantastic. His new shirt, which is like
pink one
with green writing on it. Oh, it looks so amazing. And I just think everything about that, like, I think everything about him is kind of like, push him, because he is so good. And, like, he's playing to the crowd. Like, people are like, that's awesome. He's like, thank you. Like, acknowledging people. Like, just a really good wrestler. And CM Punk, too, was, you know, obviously fantastic as well.
So tell us about when this is going to be airing on The Wedge.
The Wedge, if you're in Canada and on the East Coast, it'll be this Wednesday at 2 a.m., so technically Thursday, The Wedge. CM Punk is co-hosting The Wedge, and
late tonight.
Late tonight, yeah. Well, I guess tonight, yeah. So this is perfect. This is like my perfect lead-in. So if you're listening to this in the morning, set that DVR or stay up late and drink lots of tap out. Because, it was a pretty fun experience in a lot of ways.
Before you go on, tell people what The Wedge is.
The Wedge, say it's a music program on Much Music, and each week we kind of play, you know, new music videos. I talk a lot of smack about various music videos as well, and you know, we play all sorts of stuff.
Then he tweets them.
I tweet them. tell these bands that I
you're
hate
horrible.
You're terrible. Break up. But you know, we always do fun things, and since I've started, have always wanted to have music related wrestlers on the show, and CM Punk being the biggest wrestler in the world, arguably at this point, and also being a huge music fan, seemed like such a natural thing. I also tried to get Bryan Danielson, because he's done so much work with bands, kind of off air, big Kimya Dawson, or like even us using us as entrance music. I'd love to have him, but he wasn't on the run. But we had CM Punk on, and it was, I guess maybe part of me is just so ridiculously fortunate that everyone I've met that I look up to, I've had a great interaction with. And here I was meeting someone, and there was definitely a, you're the fan, and I'm, you know. And maybe it's because, like, I was just overly excited about him being like, we're going to become best friends. Like, you know, because I've had so much luck, you know, with all these people that I've wanted.
I'm just putting my cell phone number on
the
table.
Yeah, like pretty much. Like, yeah, like, that's what I was kind of expecting to happen, because we have mutual friends, and, like, I know about.
I'm surprised you didn't know who you
were. If he did, he did not let on at all. Like, at all. He did not let on that he cared or anything. He was really excited that I did.
Just suddenly give him a Spin magazine.
Like, I gave him a... Maybe he thought I was Action Bronson the rapper.
Yeah.
But anyway, I gave him a Spin... no, I didn't give him the Spin magazine.
I was going to say, John Tenta as well, a little bit.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, John Tenta too, I can see. But I you know, brought him to Silver Snail Comics in Toronto, which is, because I knew he was a huge comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
And he
went
nuts, bought a ton of stuff, and like, but there were some amazing parts that you'll see on the Wedge where at one point he brings out the belt. I'm calling it a belt. He brings out the belt.
That's what it's replicated.
Yeah,
it's
exactly,
to replicate a belt.
And I'm like, and, you know, I got to hold it and stuff. Anyway, we were talking about it on air, and I'm like, so, you know, with the belt, and he's like, wait, this is a belt, shows me his, this is a Paul Frank drug-free belt that I'm wearing, and this is a WWE, and I'm like, oh, title, sorry, and he's like, championship, a WWE champion, and it's like, isn't this the guy that kind of blew everyone's mind this summer by, like, making a point of calling it wrestling and calling themselves wrestlers? And here he is kind of admonishing me for, you know. And I asked him to give me a chop on the air, and he was like, they'll never let me do that. I'm like, oh, well, I've seen other people get chops. He's like, they won't let me do that. And I'm like, okay. Like, I guess I can't take it in your mind or something. You know, like, which is, you know, like...
An insurance thing, I'm sure.
I'm sure an insurance thing as well. But it was just funny to see, like...
Here's a beer bottle.
To see the CM Punk that was not WWE, you know, become...
Yeah.
He is the brand. And I'm not faulting him at all. Like, this is his career, right? You know, and it's like... But it reminds me how much, like... The music world that I kind of come from is where you, at some point.
What are you saying? He's a phony?
No, not at all. Not at all. He is like a legit awesome person, and he did not back down on any of the things that he's talked about in air. And I'm still a huge fan. Like, I don't want to pretend like, oh, he soured me to the business or anything like that. But at the same time, it was a lot more awkward than I thought it was going to be. And you can watch the show and see, I am terribly nervous meeting this guy. I put him over huge.
Yeah,
we talk about Fozzy. He goes pretty ham on Fozzy. And yeah, it was a really, you know, when you hope for something so much in your mind, and when it fails to meet that expectation, you're like, oh, what happened there? So that's what this is kind of doing. I think it might make for interesting TV, though.
It's really, I watch this guy right now, and just where you try and think about, like, you know, for the years this guy was kind of, yeah, he was on the roster, but he was never focused on. He did his own thing.
Even when he had titles, he wasn't focused on.
Yeah, you know. Like, he had the little brief run with Jeff Hardy, but after that, I mean, put back to the mid-card, and it was like, you know, he did all this stuff to the side, and he would, you know, take jabs at, you know, online about what was going on. And then all of a sudden, all right, well, we're going to move the spotlight onto you, and now you are a focal point here, and you're going to do all this media now. And it's got to be a bit of a mind fuck in this industry in terms of, you know, when you are now positioned as one of the guys, and you're kind of trying to appease this audience that you've been appealing to all this time, while at the same time, he's much more akin to a John Cena now.
He is the most over person in that company, judging from that house show. Like, everyone chants CM Punk. There's no CM Sucks. You know, it's like CM Punk and even over Jericho, like, who, you know, a legend, Chris Jericho. And you know, one of the best wrestlers of all time. And CM Punk is the star. And, yeah, like, it must be weird. And I think it's like bands, like, you know, like Rage Against the Machine or even like a Chumbawamba, you know, like, I don't want to say like.
I want to know how you draw the line.
Well, I think it's
from
like
Rage
something
Against
where,
the Machine to Chumbawamba.
Well, I think it's like something where you start doing something and then all of a sudden it becomes, people pick up on it. Well, Chumbawamba was an original, they were a crass band. They were like a political anarchist group from way back. They started in 1985. I think their first record came out, and really did a split with Noam Chomsky. They were like, you know, died in the wool. And even when they became really popular, they were still really strong activists, which is kind of like where I see the analogy with CM Punk. Okay. And I see Rage Against the Machine, too. Like, Zach LaRocca, for all the faults you can draw about Rage Against the Machine, he legitimately cared about the issues he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think CM Punk does, too. But I think at a certain point, you have to make the trade-off where you're like, well, I'm now the business. Like, they're, you know, like, CM Punk is WWE, and, like, you can't be the rebel when you are the company, when the company's being built around you, you know? And we talked about ice cream bars, and at one point he's like, yeah, I still want those ice cream bars coming out. And it's like, I guess, like, that's probably why that summer of – this Summer of Punk, not the original ROH one, but this Summer of Punk never really went anywhere, because he did sign a contract, and he does have to be the brand. And now he has to go from being CM Punk, who could – you know, talk smack about whatever he wanted, to being the CM Punk that has to do the make, well, not has to, but is doing the Make-A-Wish, is, is signing those thousands of pieces of paper for autographs every
day. Not that that's wrong. Like,
no, because that's like, that's the business, right? Like, and that's where he's at. Like, he couldn't go back to not being that way at all. Like, I would never.
I think that's a mistake, though. I mean, because that's what Kane is saying.
It is a mistake, but like, what do you do? Like, there's really...
He could still be genuine. He could still be, you know, outspoken.
I think he is still genuine in being outspoken, but also it's like WWE isn't like, even like TNA, it's not a company with creative control. It is a corporation with stockholders that's beholden to stockholders. So if like CM Punk's like, nah, I'm not going to sign these 500,000 pieces of paper this year, I'm just not going to do it, and because I think it's bullshit. And if you meet me, I'll sign you an autograph, and that's it. Well, then the kids won't maybe buy those pieces of paper, and then the bottom line goes down, and then like
you can certainly argue that this version that we see now appeals to a much broader base than more so it appeals to people more broadly, but maybe not as effectively as it did to one core audience that it did last.
And
summer.
I think he's brought that audience into the world more of that core people, like seeing him when he's like, he came back out after he won against Ziggler, and Jericho came out, and there was like, you know, it was a fun time. And then he comes out and cuts this promo about coming into Canada and being refused entry because he's, you know, notorious for hating Canada, which I even bring up in the interview. And he's like, I never hated Canada. It's like, I've heard you say you hate Canada, but anyway, but he's like, he tells the story about how he was like refused entry with Colt Cabana. And then he pauses even because the whole crowd like erupts. Like Colt Cabana is an inside term that has now become everyone's term.
Wow, amazing! I got that reaction. Yeah, like in Toronto.
Like,
wow,
people are just like, because it's Colt Cabana now, right?
And
like,
Toronto is a very.
And when was
smart.
The last time Colt Cabana performed in Toronto?
Yeah, but Toronto is a smart crowd. Yeah. Even if you've never seen Colt wrestle, like you know of.
Well, I'm impressed. They would get a giant reaction at WWE house show.
Well, and if I'm a kid who loves CM Punk and he keeps talking about his best friend Colt Cabana, I'm going to look up Colt Cabana.
Absolutely.
And then, as soon as you listen to Colt Cabana or start following him, you can't help but become kind of a fan. So. You know, I'm sure that's what it's helped. So, like, I think CM Punk is kind of, you know, like doing that thing that bands that kind of stumble into the position in our band music world that he's in WWE, the ways they handle it that's cool is they try and bring all the stuff that they like along with it, you know? Yes. Like, he's talking about – one of the cool things we did talk about is he's going to do this DVD, and he talks about it where he's like – I'm like, this is the first time there might be actually good music on a WWE DVD product.
Oh, they've got Creed?
Yeah, exactly. And he's like,
he gets to pick the music?
No Limp Bizkit. Yeah, he's like making sure it's like Rancid, Bouncing Souls, like H2O. Not underground bands by anyone's imagination, but still stuff he likes.
But at what point would he get to use music in a wrestling DVD?
Well, they always have bands on there, right? Like, they always have, like, you know, like, during the documentary, they'll always have, like, Can You Take Me Higher? And Ray hugging his kids, or, like, you know, like, I did it all for the Nookie. And then, like, Rock, just like a montage of Rock dropping bottoms or some shit. You know, that's like, really but he's cool. Gonna, you know, and also, like, he's talking about these independent wrestlers.
Did he get to make some requests?
He did.
The
he
Wedge?
Requested Rancid Salvation and an Aqua. H2O video.
In Aqua. Not Aqua.
Dr.
And,
Jones.
Well, and then I was like, at one point, I'm like, oh, this is going to be really cool. I'm going to play a Born Ruffians video, which features Chris Hero. You know, Chris Hero? He's in a Born Ruffians video, a Toronto band. That's like, it's pretty awesome. It's like all slowed down to the speed of what they do for scientific reenactments of car crashes. Speed, and it's just like, you know, punches, and it's a fun little spot type thing. And I'm like, hey, Chris Hero, you know Chris Hero? And he's like,
But his name's Cassius Ono.
Well, that's what I was like. I'm like, oh, should I have called him by his FCW name in case they bring him up? Right? Like, I would thought it would have been way more excited to find out that Chris Hero is in this video.
I don't know of this Chris Hero you speak of.
But he's still, like, bringing those guys along with him. And, like, you know, I think smartening, freshening up the product in a lot of ways, you know? Like, it's hard now because the rock scene of stuff is the spotlight. And it's fantastic, but it is the spotlight right now. But I think if him and Jericho were able to be like the Broadway of everything type thing every week, it would be amazing to watch them go back and forth.
There are a lot of high expectations for them almost being the Ricky Steamboat and, yeah, and Macho Man Randy Savage match of this WrestleMania.
I kind of think just judging by the way, you know, I think both of them just kind of have that vibe going in that this is the one they want to do. Like, they want to steal the show. And if, yeah, this is going to be that the one that the wrestling fans like.
Jim Ross was writing about this, that it would be interesting if Punk and Jericho requested to go on first, with the advantage that your time isn't going to get cut. Mm-hmm. Because if you're late in the show and you've got to follow maybe Hell, your time's probably going to get cut down from 20 minutes to 12.
As we saw.
And if you open the show, you don't have to worry about that.
See, that, but I still think this Hell in the Cell thing might get changed.
What do you mean? Change to not be a Hell in the
Cell? Yeah, because they don't know how to set it up, right? And it's like you destroy the sight lines.
Building a different version of
the
Cell.
Yeah, because you're going to have something that can roll in.
Yeah, right? There's no way you could take away that step now.
Unless you did like a first blood match. I think that's the one thing. Maybe you're right. Hell in the Cell with
a member of Metallica in every corner. Oh, that song just drives me nuts, man. Aaron, it's just so over the top, ridiculous.
Playing that Metallica festival coming up.
Oh shit,
the Orion Music Festival in.
So watch out what you say about Metallica.
No, believe me, I am.
You don't want to fuck over Lars.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm terrified of this festival. It's like a bunch of indie rock bands at Metallica. And a couple, like, metal bands, but even hipster metal bands. So it's going to be, like, a real...
Is that every band's dream to one day put together a documentary as depressing as Metallica's was? That you're children at 40?
It's my dream that documentary never gets made about my band. It's my dream that we can, you know, keep all our fighting in behind closed doors.
Fucked up monster.
Yeah, fucked up monster. Ours would... I don't even need... you know, a psychiatrist to bring me to tears with this band, with my band. I can bring brought to tears by just any one of those dudes, and I can bring them to tears. Sorry.
All right.
I'm trying to recap right now if there was anything else.
I was
going to
tell you the Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, yeah. The guy hated Stephanie. So, I guess we got it here.
Yeah, so the drum tech for Taylor Hawkins on the Foo Fighters tour it was an awesome dude. He was like a really cool, awesome guy, and he... I don't want to say his name because I don't want to like ruin his privacy and stuff, but he used to date Stephanie McMahon.
Wow.
And they met because at the time he was working for Limp Bizkit, and they would of course do WWE events all the time, and they hit it off, and they started dating, and they were seeing each other, and then he went away to Europe with Limp Bizkit, and they were like still kind of seeing each other, and they would write to her and not hear back. Anyway, the Limp Bizkit came to play the WrestleMania, whatever WrestleMania that was.
19.
Yeah, and he had heard kind of through the grapevine now that, because he's also really good friends with a bunch of the wrestlers, that she was seeing Triple H.
Oh, Jesus.
So he came back, and he's like, he didn't care, right? He was like, you know, he was a fan of the product and got to meet Vince and got to meet all these people and like... You know, and they had a fun time. So he came back, and she called him into an office and was like, everyone get out. She's like, I'm dating Triple H now. We're kind of seeing each other.
Whoa.
We're getting married. We got married. Or we're getting married.
No.
And he's like, I know. It's totally cool. It's totally awesome.
Oh, wow. What a breakup.
Yeah. He was like telling me about, I'm like, wow, you must have lived the most terrifying experience having to go to Vince McMahon as the guy that's dating his daughter. He's like, yeah, it was terrifying. As a wrestling fan, it was freaky. It was really, really freaky. And then also...
So the band loses Wes Borland, and he loses his woman. Probably all within like a year.
And he also one time got hit on by China at an airport.
That's like 6 degrees of ooh.
Yeah, but he's married, so he was like not having any of it. But he's still like, as a wrestling fan, it was like the weirdest thing to have happened to you in an airport.
Does this guy look like Triple H?
No, not at all. He does look like a wrestler. Okay. He is, and he and I have said that we're going to form a tag team together.
What would it be called?
We were trying to think of that. I was saying the Road Crew.
The Road Crew.
Well, because that's the name of like roadies, right? Okay. But like we are the Road.
Or you could be the Road. You could be the Roadie. You're the
Roadies.
The Road.
Well, but I'm in the
Roadie. Roadie's been taken though.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
That's true. And
road
like, but come out to Road Crew by Motorhead. You know, they already have a pre-existing relationship with WWE. We can just waltz right in and take that as our theme. You know?
You're all set.
All set. All set. All set to be a star. Yeah. But, yeah, no, like, that was what I was kind of referring to, though. Like, I've got a lot of friends that are friends with wrestlers, and I think the one of the main things is they're not fans of the business, right? So they never will ever have to deal with, like, 'cause the last thing you want to do as a wrestler is think about wrestling when you're at home. Like, at one point with CM Punk, I'm like, I forget what I was talking about. It was some match, and I'm like, oh, like, there's YouTube links of it. You should check it out. And I'm like, wait, but probably when you get home, the last thing you want to do is watch YouTube links of wrestling. He's like, you have that right. Like, and it's true,
New
right?
Japan pay-per-view's up. I gotta check this out.
Gotta see it, you know?
Naito and Okada.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I'm sure he does watch that stuff eventually, like, from time to time, but, like, you know.
I doubt it.
I guess it's
dude, I find that in MMA as well. Some of these fighters, they don't know anything, like,
well,
about other
out,
fighters.
Right? Like, yeah, and same, like, with the music. And you're on the road, right? Like, you can't stay. You know, I see so many comparisons between, like, the life of a musician and the life of a wrestler, because it's hard to stay, like, abreast to what's happening when you're, like, you know, driving.
Like, do you go to a lot of shows these days?
No, not really. Yeah. No, and I buy music still. I, like, still listen to a lot of bands, and I still try and check out new stuff. But, like, yeah, like, I've got a kid and a home, and I'm, you know, the last thing, my wife's pregnant. The last thing I want to do is go out and see, you know, a band. That being said, I still love music and I still listen to it, but just, like, time-wise. And, like, I'm sure CM Punk, the last thing he wants to do when he gets home to Chicago is, like, oh,
you know, Shikara show.
Yeah, or Billy Corgan's Fed's running a show this weekend. I can't wait to go, you know, like, unless his friends are on the bill and stuff. And that's kind of like when you're in a band. Like, I'll go to shows still if it's, like, my friend's band's playing and they're in town. I'm like, oh, great, I'll get to see him finally.
But I'm, like, for interviews and everything, I'm almost more interested to hear what this guy's like outside of talking about wrestling. That's why I like I like seeing his interviews talking about MMA with Aunt Helwani, and why I'm interested to see your interview.
Yeah, I know we talked about Ben Weasel from Screeching Weasel, and I said, you know, no one really made a big deal when CM Punk said he wanted to fight him, and he's like, you know, a guy from the punk world who kind of not did what Chris Brown did, but also assaulted two women physically, and CM Punk kind of cut a good promo on that dude.
Maybe Punk is going to challenge Ice-T.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that would be hilarious. I would love to see. And then that's the other thing about these wrestlers too is they're on the road constantly, right? So, you know, like, they're just worn down, run down, and things like that. I just think it was like my fantasy of how it was going to go versus the reality. There was a discrepancy between the two. That's when it was like, oh man, that was rough. That was brutal. But it was definitely the most I have not had a guest intimidate me more with their actions, but also with me being a fan.
Even including musical heroes that you've met?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like Liam Gallagher.
Liam Gallagher was a dick?
No, he was amazing. No, he was amazing.
Really?
Yeah, like all
but I mean, in terms of intimidation, like you're saying you were more intimidated by
far more
Punk.
Intimidated. Like, I've never been intimidated by, like, I've actually lucked out. Like Jack Black, like Dave Grohl, like all the big name people that I've gotten to meet or interview, the Arcade Fire or whatnot. They've all been, you know, like you kind of disarm them, I guess, also because I'm from their world, right? Like, so I'm like, hey, what about this club in this place in Spain? And they're like, oh God, we played that.
Or
what about audiences here? Yeah. Whereas like with CM Punk, I am a fan, you know, like I'm like,
well, that's awesome. But I'm sure your fans are pretty, you know, stoked to see you in a different light.
Yeah. Normally, right? I try and diffuse that. You know, normally I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, like, great to meet you guys. You know, but CM Punk definitely never really put me at ease.
Well, then the DVD is going to come out, and maybe Fucked Up's going to make its way onto the DVD.
I was going to give him a CD at the end. I gave him a book of old hardcore flyers, because I'm like, hey, if you ever need images, this is where everyone in band steals from. It's like a great idea for graphics and stuff, and it's like a cool book. So it's like a collection of old flyers called Fucked Up and Photocopied. So I gave him that book, and I also had a Fucked Up CD, and I'm like, I'm not giving it to him, because I don't know if he's going to just, like, throw it back in my face and be like, oh, I don't like you guys, or, like, whatever. Like, I made the mistake of one time giving Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat a Fucked Up CD, and it was when we put out our first record, Hidden World, and I was just, like, so much of the mind, well, he'll know who we are, so I give it to him, and he's like, oh, great, thanks for giving me your band Hidden World CD. I'm like, oh, we're called Fucked Up. The album's called Hidden World. He's like, oh, yeah, cool. Thanks, man.
Knowing Damien's luck, he would have given the CD to Punk, and like 4 weeks later, downloads, Song of the Week. Fucked Up.
I wish. No, it definitely, you know. And then afterwards, like, you know, he said he'd do that wrestling podcast that I want to do, still about music and stuff like that. He was a cool dude. Like, I don't want to It's so weird because, like, it was a cool experience and a really awesome experience, but also... Yeah.
I never judge guys based on, like, a 20-minute interaction with a stranger.
Exactly. Like,
mm-hmm. Listen, I'm certain that I've done... I don't do many interviews because I'm John Pollock, but when I have done them, I'm sure there's times where it's like, listen, a guy's cold calling me, a person I've never talked to before. Maybe I don't come across as the most likable. Maybe. And maybe they think I'm a dick. I'm not trying to be a dick, but... I can totally see how, you know, maybe...
You multiply that one interview by however, like,
exactly.
I don't know, 30 in a
throw
day.
Out all these impressions.
Yeah, I think it's also important that, to you remember, and this is not against CM Punk, because he was fantastic. When that light went on, mm-hmm. every single time, it was great. It was
cool.
It was all you'd want, right? But I just think as anyone who gets interviewed, you owe that person that's interviewing you a debt. You know, they're the one that's doing the work. Yeah. Like, you're just talking, and they have to listen to you, and they have to then... convert that into text, mm-hmm. and that's how they make their money, or that's how they get through their internship or whatever. And so I think you owe that person every single time a decent experience, mm-hmm. because they're the one that's giving you the opportunity to promote what you're doing. They're the one that's putting you out there on a bigger stage. And so, you know, nothing against CM Punk, because I think CM Punk was absolutely 100%, like, no matter how tired he was, when that camera went on, he was CM Punk, like, mm-hmm. what you'd want him to be. And Liam Gallagher, too. Like, Liam Gallagher, when that light goes on, he's Liam Gallagher. Like, he's Liam Gallagher when that light goes off, too. But, you know, he knows what people want. And I think that's what you need to do as a talent. Like, you need to provide the person that's giving you the opportunity to promote yourself the interview that they need.
We've got feedback to get to. Wow. So let's do that now.
Is it okay if I split on the feedback?
Yeah,
I can listen to it. Nothing against you, Jay Hunter, or anyone else that's sending in feedback tonight, but I got to do another interview.
So, Wei, always a power-packed edition when we have Damian Abraham on the show.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we could talk a whole week with that guy, so... Yeah,
so we are now going to delve into your feedback, everybody, because we always want you guys to get in your thoughts on the show, because maybe someone thought this was the best WrestleMania of all time. And we'll start off with Blaine Vandergriend. I really wasn't into this show at all. Going into it, the only matches that had me somewhat interested were the only two matches that delivered, that being the ladder match and the triple threat with Angle, Benoit, and Jericho. I must admit that I found the Hardcore Battle Royal very entertaining as well, as I had no idea what to expect. Other than those three and the main event, though, nothing else impressed me, and I found that most of the card was just filler. As a high school student at the time, I was a huge Stone Cold fan, so I may have been more negative about this show because he wasn't on it, but I did understand that he needed to take time off for his own well-being. There was also no Undertaker match on the card, which may have hurt it significantly as well. We never talked about that the Undertaker was injured at this time, and one of two WrestleManias in his whole career he missed.
See, but the Undertaker at WrestleMania at this time was not what it
was. No, I'm not saying it would have been a great match. I'm just saying he wasn't on.
This was coming off of the Boss Man Hell in the Cell the previous year.
Yeah, not exactly. And who would he... the next year he had the great one with Hunter.
Oh, yes. That's
the forgotten one. Mm-hmm. I disagree. I thought the triple threat was just... Granted, I had different expectations than for the Godfather match, but I thought that three-way just really under-delivered. And I think sometimes people just don't want to say that about a match involving guys like this.
It was still a good match if you compared it to the other matches on the card, but if you went in with higher expectations, I could totally I totally agree. Alex Rios, the fact that 2000 was by far my favorite year of wrestling, I even watched some of the WCW when most thought it was unwatchable. On the WWF side of things, to me this may have been the weaker show of the year next to Armageddon in December. This was just like Uncensored, one gimmick match after another. Even at 16, I hated McMahon in every corner and didn't get why we wouldn't have The Rock versus Triple H straight up. But unfortunately, we got them at Backlash the next month, not that I'm complaining, because that was a great show. And on a side note, this was the only WrestleMania I can think of that did not have The Undertaker. Yes, we just talked about that.
Jonathan Hancock, I remember ordering this event along with the all-day WrestleMania access. I started watching at noon and went through a few T-160s. Those are old VHS tapes, everyone, and not pills. I had started watching at WrestleMania 13 and enjoyed seeing highlights of the previous WrestleManias. My biggest memory of WrestleMania 2000 would be of Mick Foley's elbow from the apron that fell short, along with having a heel champion and Triple H going over. Thanks for the great reviews.
Why was it that Foley came out as his Mick Foley persona and not Mankind or Cactus?
I think this was his last match. It was to be significant that this is the first time you're going to see Mick Foley on a major show. I don't know.
That seems silly to me.
Who cares? He was pretty much Mick Foley at this point anyway, whatever the name was that he was billed at.
Carmine Lavieri. I too ordered WrestleMania all day long along with the pay-per-view. In the days before YouTube and the like, all day long was a really cool way to see some highlights from old Manias as well as some behind-the-scenes stuff. As for the show itself, the only really memorable thing is the Triangle Ladder Match. Everything else, even the main event, feels like something out of any old B-list pay-per-view. It's really a shame that the peak of the Attitude Era couldn't produce a better WrestleMania, but the next year we got the best Mania ever, so I guess I can't be too upset about it.
Yeah, what a difference between those two. Yeah. Sean Smith, looking back at WrestleMania 2000, it wasn't as bad as I originally thought. The hardcore title match was a fun 15 minutes with multiple guys getting split open hard way by a boxed fan, an amazing triangle ladder match that reinvented the use of ladders in pro wrestling, as well as a blueprint for the upcoming TLC matches to come, and a good fatal four-way for the title. Even the triple threat double title match told a good story. To me, the most entertaining part of the show was Hardcore Holly calling Michael Cole a little shit on live TV.
I heard that, yes. John Funk, hey guys, I actually did order the 8-hour package before WrestleMania. I actually thought this part of WrestleMania was better than Mania 2000 itself. The stories from various wrestlers and agents were great. Pat Patterson almost broke down discussing the Iron Man match, calling it his favorite match and really putting over Shawn and Bret. Just one of the great stories.
It was funny in the post show that I had on this VHS. It was like 8 minutes, and it was just like promos from guys afterwards, but and they talked to Edge and Christian, and then they talked to Matt Hardy, who was with Jeff, who was laying on the ground being tended to by the physician. And Matt's just like openly talking about this as like, you know, we planned out a lot of spots and it took all of us to put this together, like completely like breaking down any walls. Wow. Of trying to hide. He didn't even talk about losing the match. He's like, this is the greatest performance we've ever had. We all came together. We had a lot of creative ideas for this match, and everyone had to be on their game to execute this perfectly. It's just funny to see on a WWF release.
But you know what? Like back then on Bite This, I don't know if Bite This was around at this time, but that was the MO for those shows, so maybe that's what he thought.
We continue onwards with Brian Kaufman. What a lousy WrestleMania. I remember being in shock when a heel walked out of WrestleMania as champion. I also remember a commercial that aired during the pay-per-view advertising WrestleMania X7. They talked about breaking the all-time indoor attendance record at the Astrodome. Later, WWF realized this wouldn't be possible, and I never saw the commercial again. No, that was a short run.
Daniel Stack, this was a rather average Mania, but the company was so white hot at the time that it didn't really matter. With all the tag matches in three and four ways, I guess they wanted to reward everyone with a Mania payday after the great year or so of business that they just had. I remember this show being botch heavy as well. A messed up pin in the Euro IC three-way match, the ending of the Hardcore Battle Royal with the Holly Boys, and also Foley missing the announce table. It would be awesome if you guys could review the Raw that was the night after WrestleMania 14, when Xbox showed up. Maybe the week after you could review WrestleMania 20. No, we're not doing that.
We have set up our schedule for the month.
Maybe so. Later. If Xbox ever becomes relevant again, sure, maybe.
One of those days. David Duffenberg. Watching the show again just wasn't possible. It was just frustrating to watch. First, we get a time waster having to deal with Chester McCheeserton. Nice WrestleMania moment there for Blackman. It was really annoying to me that in the Eurocontinental three-way, they had the IC title defended first. Even though the value of the belt wasn't as high as it was far more prestigious than the European title. The main event was fine, but as a WrestleMania main event, it was far too predictable in the wrong way. Everyone knew Rock and Triple H would be the final two, so why didn't they just have those two in the main event alone? In WrestleMania 9, the heel won the main event, but the crowd went home happy with Hogan winning. Triple H winning in the biggest show of the year as a heel was a letdown and would have been a fine time for a Money in the Bank cash-in if the concept was around back then. Overall, I give this show a 3 out of 10.
Terry Small, I own the WrestleMania box set that came out a few years ago, and every now and then, I will start to watch from number one and watch them in order. This is one of the Manias that I don't look forward to. The main event was a cluster, but once they eliminated the two guys who had no shot of winning the title, Rock and Triple H had a solid match until the screw finish.
Kid Canada, I still remember JR yelling, "Triple H is the champion! Why?" after the title match and wondering the exact same thing. I guess the rock-bottoming Stephanie was supposed to be even better than winning the title. The final conclusion to The Rock's chase for the belt ended up culminating at Backlash instead of Mania, which meant I had to shell out for another pay-per-view that I probably wouldn't have bought otherwise. Well done, Vince.
Martin Ryu. still remember this WrestleMania like it was yesterday. Until last year's WrestleMania, this was the worst WrestleMania ever produced. You had a horrible undercard with too much multi-person matches, and the main event was the worst part of the whole shoe. You had your top four stars at the time wrestling for the WWE, and you couldn't care less about them because the focus was on all the McMahons. The ending was so telegraphed you could see it come from a mile away. Did anybody at the time actually think that McMahon wouldn't screw The Rock? I don't think so. The only positive to come out of the whole thing was that it took them 11 years to produce another bad Mania.
Aaron Humeni, you guys had mentioned during the Raw review that you didn't think or know of anyone who ordered WrestleMania all day. Well, I did, and still have it all on tape. It took up almost 2 8-hour VHS tapes. If you guys wanted a copy to actually go back and see all what they showed, I can make you one. Oh, that I might have to see, how they kill 8 hours.
Well, from all, you know, all these reviews, it sounded pretty good.
I would, if they did that now with the WWE Network, I'd totally watch it all.
Sure, if you're going to have a party with your friends, I totally understand it. Yeah, why not? Would it be a special anymore, though? How many highlights can you actually watch of Mania?
Just one day a year. It's like every year when the Super Bowl is on, I have zero interest in watching the Super Bowl, but I enjoy watching all the pregame stuff. I'll like turn on my TV at 1, and I'm doing other stuff, but I keep it on. And then when the game starts, I tune out.
Okay, Chris Williams, I just watched the pay-per-view for the first time in years. I forgot how bad Too Cool was, and it was a reminder how bad they really were. The highlights for me were the ladder match for the tag belts and the triple threat between Benoit, Angle, and Jericho. I also enjoyed the hardcore match, but it was just too many guys, and it made it hard to follow what was going on.
We continue onwards here with... Sorry, who did you just read?
You're up with Dan Zapula.
All right.
I'll read Dan's.
Okay, go.
Oh, you go ahead.
Dan Zapula. I always felt both satisfied and cheated by this main event. It was entertaining to see Foley in there for one last match, but we all knew that Triple H Rock was the rightful match that should have taken place. Yes, we finally got that match up during the last half of the Fatal 4-Way, but it wasn't the same. Sadly, we'd never end up seeing those two square off one-on-one in a Mania main event. Opportunity wasted.
We go to the Godfather, Nate Milton.
What's going on?
Brother Pollock, Brother Ting.
As a WCW fan, WrestleMania 2000 is one of the few WWF events of the time period that I actually paid for, and a lot of my decision to purchase it had to do with the numbering. You might laugh, but they were very smart in their promotion of Mania 2000 as a must-see show. In addition to the pay-per-view, I also bought the N64 game and a picture book that highlighted all of the workers on the card. I don't know if I would have done that for WrestleMania 16. I also ordered the all-day package, as it was worth the extra $15 to have a constant stream of wrestling on in the background for my guests. As for the show itself, I think it highlighted the best and worst of late Attitude Era WWF programming. A solid roster and an amazingly hot fan base subjected to lazy booking and way too much involvement from the McMahons. That being said, I look back on this event fondly. For all of the flack that it's going to get, I wish the WWE would promote a show today that could get me to part with $50. I give this show an iced tea approved 6 out of 10.
That is true. WrestleMania 2000 does sound like a more spectacle than WrestleMania 16.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a stickler for tradition and Roman numerals.
Yeah, and not fake Roman numerals like X7.
Yeah.
X8.
Uh-huh. Happy, what would it be? XXVIII birthday to you, John.
And same to you, XVIII.
XXVIII.
XXVIII.
There we go. Maybe you should just call it 2012 birthday.
X18?
No. Well, that's it. How far has this
We are at 6
gone?
Hours and 24 minutes, and we're going to wrap stuff up now, because next week, Way, we are reviewing the March 8th, 2004 edition of Raw.
Wow, and what is the significance of the March 8th, 2004?
It's Raw going into WrestleMania 20, which is going to be our final review of Mania Month, where we are going to be joined by my good friend Brad Peck, who went to WrestleMania with me for that very show in 2004, and he went to WrestleMania with you and I in 2006. We have a mutual friend.
Yes, our WrestleMania buddy that we... that I see once every few years.
Yes. So he's going to join us in studio. Very entertaining guy.
I'm interested to hear some road stories between John Pollock and his wrestling buddies on their trip to Madison Square Garden.
find out so much on that trip to New York.
But first,
including a cocaine bust.
Wow, what a tease. I didn't know you had that lifestyle, John.
I did not, but that was part of the trip.
Okay, all right. But first we review the Go Home show, and that's what we'll be hearing next week.
Yes, featuring The Rock on that Go Home show for Raw. And on the Go Home show for this year's Mania. There's the link.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap us up. Let's go out with some music, Wei. There were so many different musical references made on this show. Is there a particular song that's stuck in your head from all this discussion with Damien that maybe you want to end the show off with?
You know, I know Damien requested some Aqua after hearing your approval for it, but I think we have to save our audience from that torture. No offense, John. And let's go out with Ice-T. Get your what is this?
Grab your bitches.
Grab your bitches. I don't know what this song's called, but it might as well be called Grab Your Bitches.
All right, here's some iced tea with a straw.
Godfather's in the house. Grab your bitches. Look at me, everything I own's iced out. Pimp baby, you can see my wrist with the lights out. This time I do it, mad bitches in clothes. Godfather baby on the plate to my rose. Step back, hate to make a little room for my hoes. Gators on my feet, take a look at my toes. Money is the reason all the real players know that. Godfather lays punks to rest. You got no chance up against the best. A rock's in the east and a roll's in the west. If you don't dig the pimpin', I could really get less. Cause pimp or die. Pimp or die, baby. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
Come on.
Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy. G-O-D-F-A-T-H-E-R. Hoes start running when they see my car. Even though I'm a pro wrestling star, they know I don't play and I gotta get paid. Everything I wear, baby's tailor-made. I come into your town and go off like a grenade. And anyone who steps on the mat, they get laid. Let me pimp or let me die, that's the game I chose. Condos, speedboats, and beautiful hoes. Cartier wristwear, furs and gold. And mad cash, baby, too much to fold. Cause it's pimp or die. Pimp or die, baby.
Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
Grab your bitches!
Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
Big pimpin' jumpin' off!
Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
Godfather's in the house, bitch! Break yourself, bitch.
Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy.